Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Blue Shirt Banner Radio. My name is Jim. I am your host, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Eddie the Mouth. Good evening, Mouth. How are you?
Hello. Hey, how are you, Jim, on this fine Tuesday
Eve? Yeah, the first Tuesday of December. It has stopped raining in South Florida, finally, for those of you that listen to our live remote on Wednesday night. You guys got to hear me getting drenched out the parking lot at Bank Atlantic Center, but that's okay. It was fun, and it might be the last game the Rangers win all year. They came away with the shootout win, which was great because those Florida fans, man, they sit on their hands all night long, and at 4 minutes to go when the Panthers scored, they just went nuts, and they're all in my face and screaming at me, and I'm just like, oh, they couldn't take it. And I was so glad the Rangers were able to pull that out in the shutout. Good evening, Frosty. Nice to see you in the chat room tonight. And put the sandwich board on and go out and drum up some business for the chat room for us. But, now I know we got a lot to talk about tonight. We got EJ Hradek coming on at about 9 o'clock, and we'll get his thoughts on a lot of different things. I just got to throw – I saw it Wednesday night when I was at the game. Rangers and Panthers, right? There were two fans there that I want to know what the hell they're thinking. Ranger fans, I assume. One of them was wearing an Eric Lindros jersey, and another one was wearing a Pavel Bure jersey. And I'm just thinking, you know, these two guys that haven't played for the team in almost 10 years. I mean, I can understand the Messiers, the Graves, the Leach. You know, I can understand an Espo jersey, John Davidson. I can understand that. But Pavel Bure, you're walking around Bank Atlantic Center, it was like, it must have got it at the Sports Authority on the $10 rack or something like that. But
sure,
anyway,
wasn't Pavel Bure.
No, I'm pretty sure it was not Pavel Bure. It was a rather large gentleman, unless Pavel's been eating good in the neighborhood, as they say. It was not Pavel Bure, and it definitely wasn't Lindros, because he was upright.
Yeah, it's tough economic times. The people, you can't upgrade a jersey. Maybe you have to stick with the old ones. I still have my Ramo Helminen jersey and my Rob Whistle and Bruce Bell and all those great Ranger defensemen in the fourth number six throughout the. I know. I was at a Met game and I saw a UB Brooks jersey one time. I guess that kind of reminds me of what you're talking about. You know,
yeah.
Let's get a little bit more current, boys.
Go to the rag shop and get one of those things that you can pull the stitches out and pull the numbers off the jersey. I mean, it's just Eric Lindros. I didn't understand that at all. He's one of the, you know, get at least Bobby Holik. You might as well have.
When I hear Lindros's name, I always remember that quote by Dave Maloney, Don Maloney. Why am I constantly getting the Maloney brothers mixed up on this show? Well, anyway, Don Maloney saying after taking Brett Lindros in the draft says, I think we got the better Lindros. That always that has to go down as one of the all-time stupidest quotes. But then again, last week on my show, I played some stupid quotes by Glenn.
This is Kevin Greenstein from the New York Sun. Glenn, just wanted to get your sense on Wade Redden, what he's going to add to the Rangers' blue line core, and what you're thinking moving forward with regard to the defense.
Well, he's an experienced defenseman. He's been an all-star twice in the league. He's, in our opinion, the best first passer in the game today. He moves the puck up exceptionally. He's somebody that we had targeted immediately. He was our number one guy in defense, you know, as well as Roosevelt. We wanted to get them both signed, and we did. And we're quite happy that we've got them. And we think that it's going to help move the puck to the forwards as well as anybody in the league today.
You've done it again, McBoo.
What an in-cow poop.
Oh, boy. Every time I hear that, I just think of... He's like the Mr. Magoo of GMs. He's just wandering aimlessly through free agents, just picking them, and oh, bye. And he just... Ah, he's just horrible.
I picture him more like... You know, more like the wizard and the Wizard of Oz. Who dares to disturb the great and powerful Oz?
Pay no attention
to the man behind the curtain.
It just, you know, right now we're just, you know, we're pointing a finger everywhere. I mean, this always happens every time some kind of Ranger crisis begins. But, you know, and I'm interested to get E.J. Raddick's point on this. Take on this. Seriously, is there any other GM that really would have survived, you know, 7 years of no playoffs and then 3 years of playoff ineptitude? And really, 10 years, I think it's a little bit, I think, you know, you got a pretty good judge of what he can do and what he can't do, and I just can't see any other organization keeping a GM that's that limp. I'm going to say the word limp.
You know, not even just talking about a GM of a sports franchise. Any boss in any job. I mean, you know,
right.
He goes so long without results. But as I put in one of the threads today, Joe had asked. Joe just posted like a whole bunch of questions as far as, you know, what's going on with the Rangers, and you know, one of them was when does Jim Dolan get involved in this team, and when does he even care about hockey? And I said, the only thing you need to know, I said, I'll let the Rangers answer that question for you from their own post-game notes from last night. And the quote was something to the effect of, Madison Square Garden had its 175th consecutive sellout. the Garden has been sold out since November of 2005 against Montreal. And that's you know, to coin a phrase, that's the bottom line. Is if the Garden's sold out every night, then the cash register's ringing, and that's all the Dolans care about.
Well, one thing I have noticed, that I think the Garden, they may have sold the tickets, but I see people not showing up to these games now. I have never seen so many tickets put up for sale by season ticket holders than this year. They've been really easy to get. I've had people emailing me all over the place, you know, get rid of this ticket, get rid of that ticket. You know, as a matter of fact, I did lock down some tickets, so the mouse will be live and in person. I'm going to see Nashville. That should be a... Get to see my man, Shea Weber.
When is that game?
Let me see. I got to look it up on my calendar. Let's see. What do I got here? Nashville, February 10th. It's a Wednesday night. Hey, I'm doing a show Wednesday night. I guess I'm doing it live from the and
live from the Purples.
Yep. And then Sunday, March 14th, versus the Flyers, an afternoon game. So that'll be
okay.
Cool.
Yeah, and they never win those.
Oh, yeah. A Philadelphia game is going to be a freaking nightmare. But Nashville, you never know if we can keep... all right. Kovalchuk. I was getting a little John the Stutterer there. Kovalchuk off the scoreboard, maybe we could do... Or how about...
He's on Atlanta.
He's on Atlanta. Why am I...
That'll be easy.
All right. Keep Shea Weber off. I'm a little slow, you know... I'm a little bit slow tonight. Now, I'm going to tell you why. I think it's that handshake that I had with John Tavares today. It was like my kryptonite. It's weakened me of my hockey knowledge.
Without his super energy pill, he gets weaker and weaker and weaker still.
Yeah. Let me tell you, the Underdog. 10 people that crowded that NHL store to get his autograph today. Holy cow. Talk about disappointing turnout. But anyway,
all right,
I
let's talk some hockey. Let's talk some hockey. So after the Wednesday night game, I think we were all feeling a little better about the Rangers situation. There were two wins in a row, which was more than they'd had in a couple of weeks. And then they roll into Tampa, and our own Paulie D, our good buddy, he went to the game in Tampa and completely jinxed the Rangers, and now they've lost three in a row. They lost 5-1 on Friday night, and then they lost, I forget what it was. It was 8-3 on Saturday and 5-2 last night. So we'll talk to Paulie D in a little while about that. I see he has joined us in the chat room. Paulie had a great show last night with Kotze. We had a nice conversation in there about all kinds of things going on with the Rangers. It was a good show. So and Paulie's got another show on Thursday night coming up for his Tampa Bay shootout. So make sure you check that out.
That's cool. You know, I tell you, Paulie's involved with everything, and you know, I can't blame Paulie for any of this losing streak stuff. The blame directly goes on that New York Ranger ice hockey club, or whatever they're calling it these days, that's been performing. You know, come on. They get the responsibility. We can't blame Paulie for this one, Jim.
No, I know. I'm just, since he had just popped into the chat room, I had to give him the business. So I don't know. I really don't want to talk too much about these three games over the weekend, except for in depth in each game. Anyway, I just figure try and get to the bottom of what's going. Do you really want to dissect every game? Who's bad
not
enough
really.
Having to sit and watch it?
Well, what do you think of that? All right, go ahead.
Here's my statement. Is Henrik Lundqvist the biggest waste of money on this team? That's my question. And the reason why I'm asking that question is because if you're paying him $7 million a year, why is he not starting against the Pittsburgh Penguins on Saturday night in Pittsburgh? Somebody explain this to me. Steve Valiquette, you cannot put Steve Valiquette in goal against Pittsburgh. And, yes, he kept him in the game for maybe the first half of the game. But this is why you pay Henrik Lundqvist $7 million. This is why we are told constantly that he is an elite goaltender. How do you not put him in goal against the Stanley Cup champions on Saturday night, Mouth? I don't get it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. Just some of the puzzling moves that he's made with not trusting Boyle and then benching Leeson in that game and. Yeah, I mean, you're facing Crosby, Malkin, Gonchar, all the guys, all the power in the world, offensive juggernaut, and you start little Steve Valiquette. But not so little, but his talent may be a little bit diminished. And they pretty much left him in there for that whole debacle, and, you know. The Rangers are just so overloaded with cap ridiculousness, and you're starting to see it that, you know, the bargains that they've gone after, I mean, Sands, Vinny Prospel, they're not paying off. I mean, you get these million-dollar guys, and if they're not guys that show up every night and give the hustle and go out there and want to win a game, and, you know, yeah, I agree with you. You know, I was arguing with a Ranger fan the other day. Would you do straight up Lundqvist for Rick Nash? I'd do it in a heartbeat. And I know Mandel won't agree with me. You know, he'll say he's an elite goaltender. You don't trade an elite goaltender, blah, blah, blah. There are plenty young goaltenders out there that can make it under $1 million that are playing net and good backstoppers for their teams. You don't need to be an elite goaltender to win. Marc-Andre Fleury, I don't think, is an elite goaltender. He's a very good goaltender. But, yes, if you are going by the position of you have an elite goaltender and the feeling around the NHL is that he is an elite goaltender, I just don't – I could see getting the – say if they win Saturday, then give Valiquette the Monday game. You figure take a split, you know? But, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, right now a lot of things don't make sense. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah, and I mean, just to finish the thought on Lundqvist, he didn't even play the whole game on Friday night because I think he gave up 4 goals on 13 shots. So it's not like he had a hard night's work on Friday. And playing half a game on Friday, there's no reason why he couldn't have come back Saturday and played and then played again last night. He could have played both of those games. It was just the Stanley Cup champions on the road, you just don't put your backup goaltender in there. There was no reason for it. Absolutely no reason for it. Henrik Lundqvist did not need a rest after, maybe his neck was sprained from turning around, you know, 4 times on 13 shots, but there was just no reason for Valiquette to be in goal on Saturday night. And that's not to say that Steven Valiquette cost them the game on Saturday night. He was just part of the problem, but, you know, let's face it, out of the two of them, who obviously gives you the better chance to win? And, you know, when you have so little margin for error, which the Rangers do now, I mean, there's no margin for error. Every mistake is completely, you know, magnified now, it seems like. And I just don't understand it. So, you know, it befuddles me. It really does.
Well, yeah. You're talking about befuddled. I'm befuddled and bewildered. There's so many things going wrong right now. I can't put my finger on it. I mean, I just see sloppy, unenthusiastic play out there. I mean, yes, they played the – I thought the first 2 periods against the Penguins were halfway decent. And then the 3rd period, you get that goal. It goes off Crosby, and then the 4th goal, and then the Mike Rupp. It's a hat trick. I mean, that's disgusting. Mike Rupp, I mean, come on. It's like Brashear getting a hat trick. I mean, you know, it's just insult to injury, and the Rangers have just, they got a lot of problems. I mean, it's just, and, you know, I talked to Ricky, a friend of the show, and, you know, I consider Ricky a pretty, you know, reliable source. And he's telling me straight up that Lundqvist and Tortorella have absolutely no relationship, that they don't talk to each other, and I'm starting to feel that there's a little friction, even before I talked to Ricky about this, between Torts and Lundqvist.
Well, you know, we asked – it's interesting you say that, because when we had Andrew Gross on from Ranger Rants, when we had him on the first time, and we started. We asked him about Tortorella and Lundqvist as far as all the comments Tortorella's made about guys who, you know, try to keep them focused on the on-ice stuff and not so much on the off-ice. And one of the first guys that comes to mind with that for me is Henrik Lundqvist. And Andrew Gross's comment was something to the effect of that Tortorella doesn't really affect Lundqvist very much because Lundqvist's coach is Benoit Allaire. And I just,
right.
You know, I kind of... It's a weird kind of dynamic. It's a weird way to look at it. I think that that they have no interaction, and you know, maybe it's true. And then you know, it could be that they're headed for a bit of a, you know, some bumps in the road. I know Lundqvist was they asked him about being pulled on Friday night, and his comment basically was, "Well, I have no control over what the coach does, and you know, he decides when I play and when I don't play," And that was basically all he had to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, and he's trying to play. There's a lot, you know, we can go through this all night, but I have no idea why he doesn't have 7 defensemen up. That's number one. I don't know what he's afraid of. Apparently what's working, you know, they should have kept Sanguinetti up. I mean, he just is the 7th guy, you know, to push other guys to play better if that's possible. He seems to want to teach everybody a lesson through benching, whether it's Kotalik, whether it's Leeson, wherever.
Well, he doesn't want to teach. He doesn't want to teach everybody a lesson. He's not trying to teach Roosevelt a lesson. He's not trying to teach Drury a lesson. I mean, there's a slew of underachievers on this team right now. For some reason, Enver Leeson is the one he's going to make an example of. That doesn't make any sense to me either.
The guy who played with a fractured foot for 3 weeks for him.
Yeah, right.
I don't see that hustle out there. You know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of disconnects all over the place. And who can? I mean, really, it's like a Pablo Picasso painting here. There's so much disconnection, and you can't, you know. You play connect the dots here, and, you know, you come up with 100 things. You come up with a team just plays with no heart, no sense of team, they're too soft. The secondary scoring is abysmal. I mean, abysmal. It's a Sahara Desert. I mean, nobody scores on this team other than Gaborik. I mean, it's a joke.
Ryan Callahan scored the other night when they were down 5-0.
It was garbage. It was a garbage goal.
Exactly.
Mike Rupp's got 3 goals. I don't think the Rangers other forwards gotten 3 goals in the last 3 games. Mike Rupp, give me a break. Maxime Talbot gets his first on Saturday. It's disgusting all around. But what are you going to do? The Rangers are in such an awkward position. No franchise is run like this. It's run completely ass backwards. No one's accountable. How can you hold the players accountable when the GM isn't accountable? The coach, I don't know. I don't know. What kind of style do they play? I don't even know. I thought it was safe as death. Now it's just death.
I was just going to say, now it's just death is death. Yeah, the fans, you know, obviously the fans are already, you know, the natives are restless already. And I'm seeing a lot, you know, I'm seeing it on Blue Shirt Banner, I'm seeing it on HF, I'm seeing it on the Ranger boards, I'm seeing it on Outside the Garden. The fans are talking about Tortorella, you know, he's not right for this team. And, you know, I don't know. I still haven't decided my official position on that. It's only been, you know, we're only looking at about 50 games so far with Tortorella as coach. And Frosty brings up, I think Frosty is talking about who would be better. And, you know, maybe there is, you know, I don't know who would be better, you know, but something's got to change, that's for sure. But the other problem is, okay, you want to make changes. Well, what changes are you going to make? Are you going to make trades? Well, who are you going to trade? Really? I mean, who are you going to trade? What are you going to? Okay, let's say if you want to trade Ryan Callahan, what are you going to get for him? If you want to trade Chris Drury, what are you going to get for him? If you want to trade Michael Roosevelt, what are you going to get for him? You know, they have so few marketable chips. You know, you don't want to trade the young defenseman because then we're right back to the team we had 10 years ago. You're going to trade, you know, you're going to trade young blue chips for overpriced, overaged guys. You don't want to do that. So what do you have? Vinny Prospel. You want to trade Vinny Prospel. But what really are you going to get for Vinny Prospel? Really going to get for him?
Yeah, I mean, unless you trade Marion Gaborik with him, you're getting he has no value. I mean, let's face it. The guy's 35, 36. You're right. So I come up with the antidote. The antidote, I actually said it right, for all our problems.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Take the season. Lose. They're going to lose every game anyway. Just play. Let's get the number one draft pick. The Kool-Aid's over, boys. I'm calling it. It's
crystallizing at the bottom of the pitcher.
Yes. It's closing time.
All right, so... What did Don Meredith used to sing at the end of Monday Night Football? Turn out the lights, the party's over.
Sing, the party's over.
All right. We know you guys are fired up. We know everybody's – we got an angry mob here tonight. So we want to take phone calls before we get EJ Raddick on the phone at about 9 o'clock. 646-478-4692 is the number, and we're going to get James on the line. Good evening, James. Welcome to Blue Shirt Banner Radio. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm fine, Jim. How you doing?
Doing good, doing good.
Man, can this team – how you doing, Mouth? I'm sorry about forgetting you.
How you doing, brother?
I'm okay. Can this team score a goal and not give one back within a minute after scoring one?
No.
This seems to continuously happen.
No. Next question.
Yeah, they just kind of panic after they score a goal. They're just standing around. They let any team come walk right in, and there's another goal, and it's even again if we have a up one or whatever. And you know, it's a continuous wheel that just keeps happening. And I'm looking at this team saying, what in the hell are they thinking? You know, is it the young guys? You know, panicking. I don't know.
James, the music hadn't even stopped playing last night after the Ranger goal. The fans were still
they didn't even announce the goal yet.
Hey, oh, shit.
Yeah, the Ranger goal wasn't even announced yet when they tied it up. And then after, you know, the letdown, you hear the guy go, Ranger goals. And what the hell are you going to applaud at? It's already tied again, you know, and it's continuously happening, you know. And I think at this point, it looks like to me, I don't know, it looks like Tortorella's losing faith in many of the players. And the players are losing faith in his system or him. It's not working.
Maybe Tortorella should call a timeout after the Rangers score.
Yeah, there you go, man. Maybe they should lay them all across the street, pile up on one on top of each other and block the whole net. I don't know. These guys, they just can't do it. It gets the anger going, you know. And like you just see this happening over and over. And it's like, what in the hell are these guys doing? There's no pressure. As soon as you score, man, I think, you know, usually you have that momentum, you know, you keep pushing for another one, and instead they let these other guys right back in there and bang before the goal is announced, it's tied up or, you know, the goal scored and, you know, and these guys then it's deflated. The whole team is deflated right after that, and they look like they look disinterested again. They're standing around and, you know, letting the other team dictate play.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a mental part of the game where, I don't know. I haven't really noticed this. Does he keep the same line out there that scores, or does he change the line up normally? I really haven't noticed that. Some coaches do that. It just seems like the team is not mentally prepared. And I think that just spills over to when they score. And then it's like, you know, like you said, goal scored by Marion Score, Sidney Crosby. You know, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and then another thing, you see Gabrick around the net, which he's usually doing. You know, the guy's always, you know, in there. He's doing his job. And I don't know if you guys saw it. A couple of, you know, the Pens guys, they started roughing him up a little bit. You see a little shot to the chops there. Nobody did anything again. Nothing. They just stood around. I mean, they're showing no emotion. There's no togetherness. There's no fight for each other. That's what I've been seeing again. You know, it's the same type of, you know, in the beginning of the year, you know, they started to, you know, they were playing okay and, you know, everything was looking fine. And now all of a sudden you're starting to see people taking the liberties again. And you don't see nobody coming to, you know, say, hey, you're not going to do this to our number one scorer here. You know, you're gonna hit him. You're going to have to go through this guy or this guy. Like you guys say, maybe there's just not enough toughness. We got to do something.
I attribute that to on-ice leadership. I really do. I
Mr.
think
Drury
that comes
again.
From, well, whoever it is, you know, when you see your captain do it, well, yeah, you know, Ryan Callahan did it the other night, you know, for better or for worse. I thought he got pummeled pretty good Cook, right? He went after the hit on Anisimov, he tried to step in, but, you know, to me, that's what your captain, you know, that's what your captain should be doing too. And, you know, he just chews on that friggin' mouthpiece of his, you know, all night long. And, I'm fed up with him. I have been for a long time.
Yeah, something that keeps this happening. I don't know. Is it always with our team? It's always the Ranger captain or a player. They could light up 50 goals on another team, be the best leader, and they come here and do nothing. Except for Messier, he's like the only guy that pretty much came and did what he was supposed to do. These other guys, I mean, I just can't put my finger on it. What's the problem? Why can't they get the job done that they set out to do? They're getting paid the big bucks. Maybe that's the problem. The ones who are getting paid the big bucks, you know, they have their money and they're not worrying too much.
The team is ass backwards. Everybody, suckiest plays are getting paid the most money, except for Gavrik. It's just a menagerie. It's a nightmare. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And say, what does he do? He's sitting there chomping on his cigar as usual. And, I don't know, like you guys said before, this guy has his job for how many years now? Has produced, three playoff appearances? Bang, bang, bang. We're out, in the first round pretty much every year, except for one time, whatever it was. But, I don't know. He definitely doesn't know how to build a team because we've been waiting for such a long time. And these guys that they keep saying that, they were trying to pick the right players. Apparently, they're not picking the right players. They need better scouting or something. I mean, even in the drafts that they've picked, the guys have been all busts. So it's like everything they're doing, for whether it's draft picks, signees, trades, whatever the case may be, nothing's going. I mean, you rarely see anything good come out of it. I mean, it's like a failure rate is sky high.
Yeah. I mean, I still believe that the Rangers can turn this around. I love their guys in the minors. I love the guys coming up. I'm still not down on that. I'm still drinking the Kool-Aid with that goes. But, right now, with the way – if you take a look, you go to that capgeek.com and you look at people's other teams and the way their salaries are set up, and other than Montreal, the Rangers looks like a freak show. I mean, they've got, five guys who are making over, $4 million, $5 million, and then the rest of the team is making, a million and under. And thank God we've got Dallas paying part of Avery's contract. We've got Tampa paying part of Prosper's contract. It starts with a $7 million goaltender. And I'm not going to get on Lundqvist. I mean, I know he hasn't played that well this season. I think Tortorella has irked him, and I think he doesn't know how to react because you have to let's face it. Under Rennie, he was the man. He was coddled. They played a system that was defensive-minded, and it was, Henrik, take care of business and we'll win. And I really think Lundqvist does not buy into this system, whatever it may be, from game to game. You're right. I mean, you're right. The general manager, you can't win. Your only claim to fame is winning three playoff series, they got swept by the Devils. They lost to the Sabres, and then they lost to the Capitals. I mean, if that's your only claim to fame in 10 years, 7 years of not making the NHL playoffs, I mean, it's goddamn ridiculous.
God awful. God awful. I mean, his time passed him up. You say back in the 80s. I mean, even those Oilers teams. I know he didn't have the money and there was no cap then, but, sometimes, the teams looked okay, but there was never any, real success later on, except for the guys that he really, had from the beginning. And, because basically those guys didn't do anything in Edmonton either. So I'm not going to say the man is a fraud. I mean, if he put together that team in the, late 70s, early 80s and carried it through for a while, but I don't know, man. Since he's come here, it's just, I don't know. I mean, we do have the greatest passer in the world in Redden, right? We should be doing okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm sitting here still with the same words. I don't know. When I sit there, I shake my head looking at the screen, ready to kick my foot through it,
Somebody, he made an infamous comment that somebody brought back to our attention last night. He once said that if I had Neil Smith's budget, I'd win the Stanley Cup every year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. All right, hey, James, we're gonna let you go and take a couple other calls before we get to EJ Raddick.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it as always. And as Matt said, I'm still not gonna give up. I mean, I'm gonna keep continuing to pull for them and hope to God they get this thing back together or do something to turn this ship around.
That's right. That's all we can do. We're fans. That's all we can do.
That's it, man. We're true blue. We're still gonna continue to root for them just like always. We always have done in the past. So Hopefully they're able to do it. I mean, that's all we can do. And I thank you guys again.
Take care, thanks, James.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right. I love James. He's such a great caller.
He's so full of energy. That's what I love about him.
Yeah, he's great. All right, if you guys want to call in, we got about a half hour, about 25 minutes before EJ Raddick is supposed to be on with us. Again, 646-478-4692. Mouth, we got another caller on the line, and I'm pretty sure this is Dave, who I told you I met at the Rangers-Panthers game the other night. And this guy was fired up the other night, so I have a feeling he's gonna have a lot to say. So let's welcome Dave to Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Good evening, Dave. You're on with Jim in the Mouth. How are you?
What's up, gentlemen? Hit him with your vagina, Roosevelt. Was that a great line? Did I have the section howling? Hey, it was good to sit with another blue seater because I started booing Roosevelt the minute he touched the puck, and Jimmy joined right in. And I didn't know who he was. I actually saw you in the parking lot but didn't go up to you. And it was really funny that you were right in the next section. But, that was a typical boring Ranger game. They put us. I think me and you were the stars of the show in our section. and it was the only exciting thing. But we were quite boisterous,
that's for sure.
Yeah, me and you were definitely blue. We brought the blue seats down there. We were getting looked at. I was spitting all over the guy in front of me. I don't know how he didn't turn around and just punch my teeth out. I mean, I would have absolutely knocked myself out that game if I was him. But anyway, listen, about EJ Raddick, you guys cannot let him off the hook. I've been trying to get to this guy. I try calling up NHL Live like all the time. On the ESPN.com, he says a story that he's from Tuckahoe. And, you think that because he's so – his proximity to the Garden that he's a Ranger fan, but he's not because he was a Ranger fan, but he sent $5 in for a yearbook in 1969, and they never mailed it to him, so he became an Islander fan. So I'm thinking, what happened from 69 to 72? You know, like, where were those 3 years? He was still a freaking Ranger fan. So you got to just call EJ on the fact that he's a typical pig that switched over when they got good. You really got to call him up on that. I'm counting on you guys. Don't let him off the hook. I know you don't
all
like
right.
to piss off these guys, but you got to call bullshit where bullshit is because it's on ESPN.com. So you got to go and call him on that crap. Call him on it.
It says on his blog that he was an Islander fan growing up.
He's an Islander.
So
he's still an Islander fan.
No,
he was a Ranger fan until they didn't send him a yearbook in 69. Come on. I'll give anybody Ralph.
Are you sure it was 69? I don't think he's that old.
He's like a little younger than me. He's like 48. But listen, here's the excuses that I allow. I allow the Ranger fan to switch when they watch Ralph get beat up and nobody jumped in. I'll accept that. I'll accept the ones that when they waved Jockerman on October 31st, 75. I accept that. I won't accept the $5 yearbook. That's unacceptable in Ranger lore to switch. You're just an Islander pig. You're just one of those fans that, how sweet it was. Yeah, they live right in my backyard. They were in my backyard also. I didn't switch. Holy moly.
It's like you found a soulmate. I mean, you can certainly relate to him.
Sure. I mean, I understand the severe umbrage that he has against EJ Raddick. And now, listen, we found out last week that Bernie Nichols was an Islander fan growing up.
But he's Canadian. He could slide. He's Canadian. He grew up in Canada. Listen, I lived in Rosedale, Queens, next to the Five Towns, where my motto was so close yet so far. I used to go to North Woodmere Park to beat up Islander fans, okay? In Rosedale, there was no Islander fans. You were it was a total Ranger town. And I really despise these fans. I really, because I had to grow up and watch them win 4 times in 11 years. And it was the most horrible thing, and then all of a sudden these fans that didn't know hockey are chanting 1940, and they don't even know what hockey is, and the Rangers suck, and it's like, hey, wait a minute, I asked you to play hockey last week, you didn't even have a stick. Now you got like a Rangers suck jersey. What's up with that? So anyway, I can go on and on about that, but, it keeps me away from the real bad tragedy, which is our beloved New York Rangers, which is a horror story to begin with. I don't even know where to start. I don't see an ending to this. I don't see anything. I don't see blue skies, and I live in Florida. Jimmy will tell you. I don't see anything to look forward to for this team, unless they make a major move. The only thing I look forward to is I hope they get Kovalchuk and for next year, and they give away everybody for him. That's the only thing I could say.
I don't think Kovalchuk's coming. I think he's going to sign with Atlanta. Listen, I hear you, brother. I mean, my high school years were 4 years on Long Island when the Islanders won 4 consecutive Stanley Cups. Maybe E.J. Redick was rooting for the California Golden Seals during that period before he became an Islander fan.
With the white skates.
You're right.
Yeah, you got to call. I don't know what he was doing for those years, but you got to find out and say, E.J., there's a little stunt to your story there. You got a little time discrepancy. The yearbook thing happened what year? Let him call you on it, because on ESPN.com it said 69. You know, when you didn't get that yearbook, and the Islanders didn't. You know, you guys didn't come around till 72. What'd you do for those 3 years? Where'd you go? So now you switch from two teams. So you switched then from the Rangers. You jumped on another team, and then you went back. Then you went to the Pigs on the Island. What'd you do? You know, you got to do something. You know, be nice to him, but then at the end, don't let him off the hook. I'm counting on you guys, because
right,
I can never get through. Hey, I just wanted to say hello. Jimmy's a great guy. He was a nice guy to meet. I'm glad I met you. Hey, I just even made up with Mandar on the line, but I got kicked off because the thing was not responding on my computer. But at least Mandar even said hello, because me and him had some friction on Outside the Garden, so it was actually good to come clean with a couple of guys. And I just wanted to say you guys do a great job. Keep the faith. Listen, I've been watching since 67. You know, they've given me ulcers, heartaches. I mean, if women did to me what the Rangers did, they'd be gone. I break up with women that do shit like that. But the Rangers I keep around. And this team owes me big time. But, you know, I stay with them because I'm diseased and I'm freaking loyal. And that's all we know what to do. So, you know, somehow deep down we hope that this guy Lundqvist somehow realizes that I'm staying too deep in my net. I'm going down too early. I got slow hands. I need to come out. And I'm getting beat on this high side all the time. The whole league knows it. The whole world knows it. But me, you know, get out of there. Cut an angle down. You're staying too deep. You got slow hands. You got to do something different. Everybody, nobody shoots low on you no more. Words out, you know. And also, this defenseman, I hope learned how to throw a check once in a while. You know, we were saying that they're a bunch of Jeff Blumbergs, but I said today, they don't even turtle. I mean, these guys don't even get into a position to turtle because they don't even drop their gloves. But, you know, they're soft, they're vanilla, but there are ranges, so we're allowed to say that. All right, guys, you got other calls. Don't let EJ off
all
the
right,
hook.
Dave.
I'm counting on you. Take care.
Take care,
right,
Dave.
You.
Bye.
Did I tell you he was fired up?
Holy banoli! He could have done the show by himself. He was doing a soliloquy there. It was great.
I knew when just from talking to him Friday night, you know, Wednesday night, I talked to him in between, you know, stoppages of plays. We were yelling back and forth, and then in between periods, we talked a little bit. And he promised he was going to listen to the show and try and call in. And I said, oh, if he calls in, I know he's going to be fired up. So, well, he didn't disappoint, that's for sure. All right, let's take another call. 718-225, you're on Blue Shirt Banner Radio with Jim in the Mouth. Who's this?
This is Stan.
Oh, is this Stan?
Yes,
hey, Stan, how are you? Stan
well,
from Bayside. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah. Where to begin?
We don't know.
Outside of the obvious that Gabbert's the only guy who can find the net. But the big thing, I think, you know, Roosevelt has got to be off this team by next year. They're going to have to – nobody's going to take him. Does he have 1 or 2 years left on his contract? Do you know? I think it's two.
I think it's two after this one.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's taking him at $5 million. He's worth nothing, really. They're going to have to eat him, or hopefully maybe they can get him over to Europe for next year. But he's dreadful. He's as bad as Redden was last year. I mean, he's a nightmare back there. And, of course, our old pal Redden, I hope they haven't been so bad the last few games because he's out.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. But so those guys, you know, that's the big thing, is that there's too much money invested in these guys who are just dreadful. I mean, that's the bottom line. Until they're off the team, that's going to be a problem.
You're absolutely right. They're handcuffed by these contracts, and they're going to be handcuffed for a long time unless they figure out a way out of it.
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, nobody's taking a Redden at $6 million or Roosevelt at $5 million or Drury at $7 million, and you know, you either eat them or there's nothing you can do. I mean, that's just the bottom line of that situation. And why next. Nobody seems to be able to score is amazing. I mean, I know these guys are not expecting, 30, 40 goals, but, how do some of these guys have 2-3 goals and they're a third of the way through the season? It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean that's the stunning thing, is that, you watch other teams, and, we were talking about the Islanders, and their guys, every team's guys are pitching in. I mean, you got to put in the minimum amount of goals, and it's a mystery to me why we're not getting production. And one of the things that disturbed me is that, Brian Boyle was brought in here, and he's kind of a reclamation project, a guy who scored in college. And I want to see him actually try to regain a little bit of that scoring touch, and he's pretty much given up on that part of his game, as Tortorella has just basically said, you're going to be the fourth line defensive center, and I would like to see the mindset of these guys. Listen, everybody's got to chip in, and Callahan's has been streaky as a Ranger, we know, but he's really gone into the tank, and they're just not putting the puck in the net, and the secondary scoring, like you said, Stan, it's killing them, because they're not getting those garbage goals. They're not getting those goals when Gaborik isn't scoring, and they all add up, and they all add up to victories, and that is it's almost impossible to win with one guy scoring.
Gabby is amazing. I mean, this guy scores every game, or he sets up a goal. I mean, he's fantastic. I'll tell you, if he does get hurt this year, they're going to be down there with Toronto. I mean, they're going to be at the bottom of the league.
Yeah, you're right. He's the difference between where they are now and a ball with their number on it come June. And just to clarify, Roosevelt, after this season, there's 2 years left on that deal. $5 million cap hit next year, $5 million cap hit the year after.
I mean, that's got to be addressed, because he's just eating up too much salary, and he is terrible, absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I mean, he's, and it's funny, because his play in the last 2 years has gone completely south. I know he hasn't been a fan favorite of Ranger fans for probably like the last 3.5 years, but I really gave him the benefit of the doubt, but ever since he returned from that injury, he has looked god-awful. He looks terrible. He looks slow. He doesn't react well. And
he was never that good a skater, but he was out of position twice last night.
And he's made some really poor decisions. And I guess the real mystery is, why Tortorella is not addressing the issue. It seems like anybody else screws up on the team, he winds up riding a pine. But we're seeing it on a nightly basis with Roosevelt, and there's no consequences for Rosie.
He benched him for a couple periods earlier this year, like the third or fourth game of the year. Then he played okay.
That was the devil game, I think, was it?
Could have been.
It was like the third game of the season. You're right.
Look, obviously, one guy can't.
It's the whole team sticks. They're all sticking to join up.
All right. I'm disgusted. And it looked like it was going to be a decent season, the first month.
Stranger things have been known to happen, but usually not in Rangerland. But they could come out of it. Something could, happen. Maybe when Dubinsky gets back, and I don't know. What really bothers me is, well, not bothers me, it's troublesome. The two games they lost Gaborik, and one of those games being the Islander game, they lost it. It was like, we can't win without Gaborik, and all of a sudden the team has been in a funk ever since. I don't know.
And I know you guys were talking about Henrik before. Obviously, look, to me, this guy was the best in the league, but he's obviously not having a good year. I mean, whether it's, he's not getting the support or whatever, but, he's not at that elite level, that's for sure. I mean, he's not winning any Vezinas this year, even being a final.
Well, that's true, but,
Without him, let's say, how many times has this guy carried the team where, he'd go for weeks and give up, a goal, two goals, shutouts, and now he's, you know, 3-4 every night.
I still think he's not scoring. Yeah, I think it's just there's something bugging. I think there's just a little bit of friction there between Torts and Lundqvist, but it's speculation, you know. But, you know, right now, you know, all us Ranger fans just don't know what to do. We're in a time of woe, as they say, but we must unite. We must think positive.
Well, we still have a lot of experience at this.
Yeah, this is not something new for us, right, Stan?
Experience of being frustrated with the Rangers. It's only been 40
years
for me.
You're right there. I mean, it seems like it's the same old. It's like Groundhog Day.
Right.
I mean, really? And we wake up as the same old crap.
Right.
They fool us into thinking that they got something, and boom, reality hits. And we're battling it out for the Islanders with a playoff spot.
Are they behind them now in the standings? I mean, how can you finish behind the Islanders? I mean, how embarrassing would that be?
Well, you know, I'm not going to praise the Islanders. Go ahead,
it looks like it's going to be, at this point, it looks like it's going to be very embarrassing, Stan.
Well, you know, the Islanders, first of all, they come to play every night. I hate to say it because, I mean, they play in a third-rate organization for a fourth-rate owner and a fifth-rate building. But, you know, it's they come to play every night, these guys. You know, they got the muckers, the grinders, and all that. They want to win. Right, so look like they want to win for their coach. And, anyway. We can't put our finger on it. There's so many holes right now. You know, it would be impossible to try to dissect what's going wrong with this team. But I think the first thing that's got to be addressed is they got to get scoring from other places. I mean, that's number one.
There's no coach that can make a play a score, you know. There's no
right.
secret there. Outside of just, you know, trying to get in front of the goal and, you know, tip things in and, you know. I mean, look at a guy like Higgins who's been a 20-goal scorer a few times. I mean, this guy just can't buy a goal. I mean, what can you do? He's got two goals in 27 games. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's been a really disappointing season for Higgins. And, you know, one thing that also gets my ire up about the whole thing is Tortorella seems to think that anybody can play center ice on this team. I've never seen such a blatant disregard for the center ice position. Voro, take a face off. You know what I'm saying? You ever see a team like this?
You know, that's the thing that got me the other night in the Pittsburgh game, in Pittsburgh, when he didn't play Boyle. And I think Dave Maloney may address this. On Pittsburgh's first goal, when Voros and Brashear got caught out there on a icing, and Voros was facing off against Crosby and Malkin. I mean, didn't Tortorella think that this might come up? And the Rangers are weak enough at center without benching one of your centermen.
Right.
Especially against Pittsburgh. And what kind of crazy move was that?
I think Tortorella makes things personal, and you know, he cuts off his, you know, nose to spite his face, or whatever that saying goes. You know, he's just going to get,
And he didn't play Leeson, so he's playing short two players. I mean, I got no problem with benching a player who's not doing well, but how do you short yourself on personnel? I mean,
you bring somebody up.
Yeah.
You bring some. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You got great points, Stan. I mean, you know, we're all. You know, you've definitely found the people of like minds here. I don't understand it.
Yeah, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, the Titanic.
Yeah, as I like to say, at least on the Titanic, they had a band.
Good one. Yeah, good show.
So, all right, Stan. Make sure you keep listening. I'm gonna announce a couple of guests coming up. So, and I know at least one of them you'll be interested in. So, and we're gonna bring EJ Hradek in a couple of minutes. So stick with us. All right.
All right. Good night, fellas.
All right. Thanks for calling it.
All right.
All right, so we got about 5 minutes or so before EJ Hraddock comes on. Mouth, we knew the mob would be angry tonight, and
they come out in full force tonight.
And you know the website, the Blue Shirt Banner. The traffic has been unbelievable. The comments, we're getting more comments than we've ever had. And I'm thinking, Jesus, is this what it takes to get more comments for people just to be pissed off? But everybody's fired up. Everybody's upset. I think a lot of people were cautiously optimistic coming into the season, and then they got off to the 7-1 start, and everybody was excited, and now they've regressed so much that you could make the argument that they're worse than they were last year, and people are just fed up with everything at this point. But
No, I was going to say that. Listen. You know, I'm one of the guys that came out here and got everybody all psyched up, drink the Kool-Aid, welcome to the new era of the Rangers. I'm one of the guys I feel a little responsible for all this hoopla that I perpetuated, through the media outlets, the Roz Abrams, the Chuck Scarboroughs. They were reporting the mouth is going crazy about the Rangers. He loves the Rangers. He thinks the Rangers are going to be good this year. And, I feel responsible. But I'm going to tell you something now, folks. It's time to pick yourselves up. Stop feeling sorry for yourselves. First of all, hockey. We got hockey on every day of the week, even if it ain't Ranger hockey. We got hockey. And I'm telling you, that's something to hang your hat on. And I'm telling you, the Rangers could turn it around. I mean, how bad can you get? And listen, if they play bad and they suck it up, you know what? I'm going to say it right now. And you can't stop me. Well, Block Talk Radio could stop me. They've tried in the past and succeeded. But here, if the Rangers stink, to join up, all right, we're getting that number one pick. We're getting in that lottery. I'm sick and tired of this team. They're going to trade a couple young guys, get some guys in, make the playoffs, get thrown out, and we're going to wind up with another bad draft pick. Maybe if the Rangers finish last, like the Hockey News predicted in the bottom three or four in their preview issue, maybe we will get some draft picks out of this nonsense. I mean, I don't want to see it go there. I love playoff hockey. I want to be part of it. But, the Rangers are mediocre. They were mediocre. They were a patchwork team coming in. I got all excited because I actually thought the players were buying into this Tortorella system, and then all of it just turned to crap. And what happened, the Rangers are supposed to be in the best condition, Camp Tortorella, the whole bit. If they're supposed to be in such great condition, how come I don't see anybody hustling all over the ice? What's going on with that, Jim?
Everybody keeps asking these questions, and I have no answers for them. I really don't. I have no answers. But all I know is that speech you just gave, I felt like I was listening to Obama's inauguration speech, to pick yourselves up, dust yourselves off, America. Very inspiring.
Jesse Jackson was crying. Instead, on this show, it was Jeff Jackson.
Don Jackson. All right, we should have EJ Hraddock in a couple of minutes for you guys. Before we do, let's announce we got some upcoming guests that we want to make sure you guys know about. Tomorrow night on Blue Shirt Banner Radio, Mouth is going to talk to Joe Patterson, former Ranger and Red Wing. Joe Patterson will join Mouth right about 9 o'clock, I guess he's coming on.
Yeah, he'll be on about 9:10, 9:15. Talk to Joe Patterson today. He's ready to come on and do battle and talk about his pugilistic prowess. And interesting enough, Joe Patterson's last, Nick Fetillo's last fight was against Joe Patterson, a fight which Joe Patterson rocked his world and pulled his hair and made Nicky look like a punching bag. So, but Joe seems like a really nice guy, a real humble guy, and I'm going to try to prod him and poke and find out inside stuff. So, yeah.
All right. It should be a good one. And now let me just tell you guys, when there's a lot of guests that we booked that, and we get excited about, but I don't think that there's one we've had yet that's got us as excited as who we have next Tuesday night. Mouth and I are almost giddy about this one, if you will. next Tuesday night, right around 8 o'clock, right around the start of the show, the former player, GM, and coach of the New York Rangers, Emil the Cat Francis, will join us around 8 o'clock. He's the winningest coach all time for the Rangers in percentage and the most amount of wins, and he's also coached the most games for the Rangers. I think it's going to be great to talk to him and hear what he has to say. And I'm trying to get Donnie from Litterbox Cats to maybe come on for a few minutes with us when Emil's on, because he's a whaler aficionado, and maybe he can throw some questions to him about his days in Hartford, because he was pretty successful there as well. He was pretty successful everywhere he went. So we're pretty excited about having Emil on. That is next Tuesday night. And then we have, we have Leslie Treff from HF Board. She will be on December 15th with us again. Also that night, we're going to have our good buddies, Russ Cohen and Adam Rader. They're going to come back on and as Mouse would say, shoot the gip with us. And then coming up in the coming weeks, we still have Bob Brook and Troy Millett, both former Rangers. They are on the burner as well. We're just trying to work out their appearance fees, I think. We're just is that right, Mouse? Just just looking at the budget and seeing what we have.
We've got to get the green room spruced up over there. We still got the eight track player and the disco ball hanging in that thing.
Well, you know, our guests, they make certain demands, things that they want when they come on the show. And, you know, it's like, Mariah Carey, she has certain things that she wants when she does appearances. And it's the same with all of our guests. We have to make certain provisions for all of them. So we'll get it worked out and we'll have them on. So next Tuesday night, Emil Francis, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And tomorrow night, Joe Patterson should be interesting as well.
Yeah, we talked about it before the show. We're actually going to try to get Pete Stemkowski to come on while Emil's on the show as a kind of a surprise for Emil. So if any of you guys are in Florida and you're running Emil Francis at the grocery store, don't tell him that we're going to have Pete Stemkowski on, because I know you guys in Florida got big mouths. I don't know. Coming from a guy named Mouse. But anyway, hey, didn't Emil look good? He looked real good when they showed him at that Panther game. I got to find out what his secret is.
He was at the game?
Yeah, he was. They showed him. That John Giannone. He was interviewing him in the crowd. Yeah, they showed him, and he looked real good. And he said, this is what he said. Some guy named Jimmy came to my house and knocked on their door.
That would be me. He was absolutely thrilled that I took the time to come find him. He really was, and I called him yesterday gave him a call yesterday, and he was very nice. He's very appreciative that we thought of him and want to have him on. And I said,
we love the cat.
Big thrill, and even my dad's excited when I told him that Emil was coming on. So I think that'll be fun. I didn't know he was at the game on Wednesday night. Obviously, I was at the game, so I didn't get to see what they were doing on TV. That's too bad. It's too bad I didn't know. I could have stalked them there, too. I was following them all over the place. Get this guy away from me. All right, let's check. No EJ yet. We're still waiting on him, so we've got a couple of minutes here. You guys want? I don't know how long EJ is going to be on. So if you guys want to get phone calls in, we'll try and get you in before the end of the show on the other side of EJ Raddick. Let's see, Ovechkin. In case you guys didn't hear, we'll talk to EJ a little bit about this. Alex Ovechkin was suspended 2 games today by the NHL. They're really, really teaching him a lesson. He's going to miss the Panthers game. For the Capitals have the Panthers, and I forget who else coming up, and he's going to miss. He was suspended 2 games for the knee-on-knee hit with, what's the guy's name? Tim Gleason from the Carolina Hurricanes. So that was the sanctioning that came down.
Yeah. Well, I'll wait till EJ gets on talk about this, because OV, as they call him, he's gotten away with a lot. Let's put it this way, and I'm glad he finally got he got it coming up, so to speak.
Well, what do you think? How many games do you think Sean Avery would have been suspended today if he had to hit on Coletta from Buffalo the other night and got the game misconduct and then the knee on knee hit last night? How many games would he have gotten today? Five, at least.
Five, seven. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
How many games did he get when he made the sloppy seconds comment? He got five games for that, didn't he?
More, I think more.
Was it more than that?
I think
maybe somebody in the chat room knows. Anybody know how many games he got for what he made the comment about? Was it that
10
many?
10 or 12? That we got different. They'll put
47. 47.
Was he Don Murdoch?
Was he Dexter Manley? Oh, they're gonna make me look it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think these guys, and Mosh is in the chat room, says all I do is care about the Knicks now.
Oh yeah,
you're better off rooting for the Rangers. I only got two wins, but you know, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of injuries, and a lot of this. You know, it seems like there's not a lot of respect around there, around the league, for other players and their well-being. And, you know, you hear some of these experts talk about it, and some of the reasoning I agree with, and some of it I just think they don't know what they're talking about. I just think the players today aren't as close-knit as they used to be, and you've got a lot of young players in the league because of the cap. You've got a lot of, They bring these guys up, and they just don't have any regard for each other. They don't see each other year after year. And, a lot of dirty hits. And, you know, whether you like Chris Drury or not, when Glenn Cross cross-checked him in the head, all right, I don't care if you like him or not, he's your captain. And it wasn't a Ranger on the ice, on the bench, in the building, anywhere that came to his aid. And that just speaks volumes. Speaks volumes of how much this team has no regard for each other on a personal and a professional level. And that, you know, we throw this word around a lot as Ranger fans, but that is a disgrace. That is a disgrace.
I couldn't agree more. All right, joining us right now is EJ Hradek. He is the senior writer at ESPN Magazine. He's a former scout for the Dallas Stars, and he also does a show on NHL Live, and we welcome him to Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Good evening, EJ. Jim in the Mouth, how are you tonight?
Good evening, and I just appreciate following that last rant. That was beautifully done, and I have to say that over the years of watching hockey, I mean, I'm almost 50 now, and I think in years gone by, now maybe it's just be me, but in years gone by, things that happened on the ice were really the teammates across the league. Teammates really stood up for one another, I think, more than they do now. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's the possible penalties involved. We can't have these bench-clearing incidents anymore, I guess. But it seems to me that players did stand up for each other more league-wide, not just the Rangers, but league-wide in years gone by. That's just my observation.
I mean, I can't. Whether it's the instigator rule and the fines that come from it, players are hesitant to jump in and take. And defend teammates when there are incidents that are happening. Who knows? But, you know, we're just seeing it over and over again. And really, I, I have to think it's the player's mentality that, you know, maybe it's not such a close-knit fraternity as it once was, and maybe that's because there's so many teams and, you know, and that, but it's definitely changed in that regard.
Yeah, it could be money. It could be, it could be the fact that these guys make so much money now and there's a disparity amongst the group. There's guys that make, you know, $5, $6, $7 million, and there's other guys that make $500,000. And, you know, you're right. There's more teams, so maybe the fact that the teams are a little bit more transient, guys come and go a little bit more often, that might be part of it. But again, that's just my observation. You know, when I was growing up as a kid, I mean, the incident you pointed out there with Glenn Cross hitting Drury, I mean, that would have set off quite a battle right then and there, and it would have been a long time before they would have been able to play hockey again. And nowadays, those things are quickly settled, and then they move on.
I mean, EJ, I know you still play hockey. When we met you and we talked to you, you still play hockey. And if that still happens today, you know, you're going to your teammates' defense. You know that. We forget about all the consequences of what's going to happen. We're on raw emotion. And even us older guys, we're still going at it. Somebody cheap shots one of your guys, you know, you protect them.
Yeah, I unfortunately for my own sake at my age, I hate to say it, but that's probably true. Because, you know, fortunately I'm not playing in that kind of intensity, those kind of intense games anymore. I play with friends for the most part, but there are times when things happen, and when they do, I mean, I guess it's just the way I grew up in that era. I mean, you did stand up for one another, and you know, I would have to say that the money, the fact that the teams are more transient, maybe the fact that you have players from all over the world now, there's a lot of reasons. But the rules that they have in place in the National Hockey League now are such that, you know, guys are really hesitant to really, you know, go above and beyond sometimes because, you know, there's some heavy suspensions, heavy fines that are levied. I just feel that, you know, sometimes when there's an incident on the ice, it's kind of like the instigator rule. It's kind of bothers me when I hear people talk about the instigator rule. I mean, it's a 2-minute penalty. There might be a suspension or fine at some point attached to it down the line, depending upon the incident, but I bring this one up a lot. I mean, I was at a Devils game several years back. The Calgary Flames were playing the Devils, and it was Dave Gauthier. I took a real cheap shot at Jay Pandolfo, flattened him into the end boards from behind. Colin White didn't waste a second, and he was in there, and he took a 5-minute major, but he made a statement to Danny Gauthier and the Calgary Flames, and the Devils killed off the penalty, went on to win the game. And I just think that kind of camaraderie amongst your group and that kind of defending your teammates, it goes a long way beyond just one game or one particular incident. So when I hear people say, well, I don't want to get an instigator or that rule holds people back, you know, I would say there are certain circumstances when things happen in a game where you can't be worried about a 2-minute instigator penalty.
All right. That's some good points there. You know, EJ, I just want to kind of do a little about face, and, you know, we're going to get right to the Rangers because we're desperately in need of an outsider's view. We need to know because we're all wrapped up in this debacle as being a Ranger fan. And I got to say, EJ, I didn't know this before we were going to interview, but there was a caller on before that said that you grew up an Islander fan because the Rangers never answered your subscription for a yearbook in 1969. Now, the Islanders didn't come until 1972. What were you doing in those 3 years?
I was actually, you know what, I kind of like Gordie Howe and those guys in the Red Wings, and when the Islanders came into play, I just said, you know, this is a new team. I just kind of just jumped on the bandwagon, and I can tell you this. In their first year, they were so bad, and I can remember I was about 11 or 12 years old. They had a game up in Boston one night, and this is just to show you that I wasn't on the bandwagon after they started winning. Their first year, one of their only wins, they went into Boston, and they played in those years. I mean, that was Esposito or the great Bruins, Stanley Cup champion years. And they went into Boston, and the Bruins must have been out, and they must have been out the night before drinking, like, until 6 or 7 in the morning, because the Islanders were so terrible. And they came in there, and it was 5-0 after one period. The Islanders ended up winning the game, I think, something like 8-3. And it was really one of the only shining moments for the Islanders in a long, really terrible season. But that's one thing I remember from that first year. And the other thing is I remember their first win was it was a Tuesday night against the, I believe it was the LA Kings, and Jermaine Gagnon scored the winner, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, for the Islanders in that one. So, yeah, the story is true. I had sent $5 in the mail in, like, I guess it was 69 or 70 for what they called at the time the Ranger Blue Book, which was like a yearbook. Mm-hmm. And they did not, you know, at that time as a kid, you don't know any better. You shouldn't send cash in the mail. And no one responded. And there was no book. There was no money. There was no nothing. And so now you have no fans. So
all right,
I left the Rangers early on in that point.
All right, well, hold on, EJ. Since we've got you on Blue Shirt Bandit Radio, let's see if we can work this all out. If I give you $5, will you come back to the Rangers? Or I have a couple of gently used older yearbooks that you are more than welcome to have. Or we're going to have Emil Francis on the show next week, and he was probably the GM and coach in 1969, if I'm not mistaken. What if I get him to send you a yearbook or $5? Will that cure you?
I got to say, a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. I think if we're looking about, you know, repayment, I think there's probably a lot of interest from 1969 to now. I do think that a public apology from Emil Francis would be very lovely, and if he wants to do so next week, I'll be more than happy to listen.
One of our chat room guys said we should mail you some cash.
Yeah, well, cash is, these days, cash is a precious commodity. My advice to anybody would be to hang on to it.
So, getting back to my original question, what the hell's wrong with the Rangers, EJ? From the outsider's point of view, give it to us.
Well, I mean, it's just not a very well-constructed team. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, you have a very good goaltender there in Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, there's going to be people who are going to, I know that he's getting a little bit of criticism. He has given up some stinkers lately that, you know, you'd like to have back. But that happens to a goalie. They go through a little bit of slumps. But Henrik Lundqvist is a terrific goalie. He's a top, you know, five, top 10 goalie in the National Hockey League. So you got a good start with your goaltender. But after that, I mean, you don't have any number one center. You really don't have any number two center when you think about it at this point. You know, you have Marion Gaber, who's a wonderful player, and, I mean, that was a great addition and a terrific signing, but he is a winger. And, you know, when I look at building hockey teams from my own background and from talking to, you know, scouts that I respect and people who've been involved with building championship teams, the way you do it is through the middle of your team, and that's your top two centers, your top two or three or four defensemen, and your goaltender. So the Rangers only have really, as far as I could see, one piece of that puzzle, the goaltender. On defense, they have a really good kid defenseman there in Michael Delzato, who has got a lot to learn still, but I think is a really talented kid and has got potential to be a top-pair defenseman and a really good offensive defenseman that could, you know, be a guy that helps you, you know, long-term on the power play and moving the puck out of your end, which is so important these days. But again, you know, after that, you know, I don't know, you know, what else they have there. They have a lot of guys that kind of look like the same player to me in some regard. I think they, you know, when I look back at their building of their team in the last, you know, several years, I mean, I hate to harp on it, but in 2003 they blew a major opportunity at the draft. I mean, everybody in the first round got a player just about except the Rangers and the Islanders, who both kind of went brain dead. I mean, the Rangers could have had any number of guys when they were picking at 11. They could have had Mike Richards or Ryan Getzlaff or Zach Parise. I go on and on. But they blew a major. They got a guy who can't play. So, you know, man, if that was a major miss right there, and you know, they had some bad luck. I mean, on Ford, you know, the kid Sharapanov was an awful tragic story. They had bad luck in the lottery at the Sidney Crosby year. That was the year they really, based on their play going into the lockout, they certainly deserved to have a top five pick at least, and they ended up with 15 overall. So, I mean, when you say what is it, I just say they're just not built very well. And there doesn't seem to be continuity in their group from year to year to year. And, you know, to me, when I look at it, I just look at that team and I say, boy, they got a lot of work to do there.
Now, we should point out to everyone that when we met EJ at the NHL store, the Rangers were 7-2 at the time. And EJ didn't think much of the Rangers. he didn't have much good to say about them then either. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it's great that they got off to the good start. It's important to do that, and that's going to help them, you know, down the road this season. But again, when I look at the team, the tenets that you want to have in winning is, you know, again, I go back to the same thing. You need to be strong at center. You're in the Eastern Conference, and I mean, you just saw the Pittsburgh comes in last night. That's a unique situation where they have three guys that are just unbelievable with Crosby, Malkin, and Staal. But you're playing against Philly, you're going to go up against Carter, Richards. Now you're playing against the Islanders, you're going to see John Tavares. You're going to play against the Devils. Travis Zajac is a big center who does nice things for you. You play against, you know, just look about every team in the Eastern Conference. They've got some good centers that you go up against. And, you know, the Rangers really don't match up in that area at all. And, you know, even if they were to go out, you know, free agency, they were able to so far so good with Gabrick, and he's been terrific. But there's not those type of players are not available usually in free agency anymore because teams have been locking their guys up. You just saw Mark Savard sign a long-term deal with Boston today. And, you know, when it comes to Mark Savard being an important guy to sign and get under wraps, it just tells you that teams are signing their players. So it's so important to really draft and develop guys and also to maybe make some smart trades along the way and stockpile some picks. And, you know, the Rangers have done okay with some of their draft picks, but, you know, big picture over the last 10 years, I mean, I would have to say Henrik Lundqvist has been the best pick, and that was kind of, when you get into a sixth-round pick, you're getting pretty fortunate. And, you know, Michael Delzato seems like he's been a really good pick. Mark Staal has been a good pick, but, you know, they haven't been able to really find those guys that can be, you know, that top centerman or even that really strong second centerman so far.
One thing I wanted to, when the Rangers, because I get this inkling to every expert I talk about outside the Rangers lexicon, is that when the Rangers signed Wade Redden, people around the NHL were just like, what the hell did they just do? Did I just hear this right? I mean, am I right, EJ?
You're absolutely right. Anybody who was paying attention really knew that Wade Redden had struggled over the last, you know, year to 18 months in his career. He had really kind of had a downward slide. Even the year that Ottawa went to the finals, I just felt that he was a guy that you could really get in on and work as a defenseman. And then it went, the situation in Ottawa got gradually worse. I think what happened was, and it really is, it does happen sometimes in sports, the Rangers group at that time, Tom Rennie was the coach. Perry Pern was the assistant. Perry Pern worked with Wade Redden, and so did Tom Rennie as a younger player. Perry Pern had him in Ottawa for a bunch of years. And I just think that they were wrapped up in the Wade Redden of maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. And I think they sold the Rangers. Or like when they have their meetings and they talk about players, I think that they really were thinking about the Wade Redden of that time instead of the Wade Redden in the present. Or at least at the time that they made that decision. And, you know, the amount of money they signed them for was really, I mean, it seemed like they were really almost bidding against themselves. I know the Dallas Stars were interested in the Columbus Blue Jackets, but they weren't interested in going anywhere near the amount of money that the Rangers ended up signing Redden for. So I would say at the time the common thinking was among those who really knew the players and really were up to date on where everybody was in their career, and this is why pro scouting is so important. You know, most of those people knew that Wade Redden was on a kind of a downslide in his career and certainly wasn't a player that you wanted to pay $6 million over 6 years.
Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely absurd. I mean, you know, it's right. They almost had a fixation on Redden from years past, and they had to get him. And, Jim, I want you to – because, EJ, I want you to comment on that. We have a clip. Jim, can you cue up that clip of the Redden signing, what Sather says after the signing? Can you play that?
Yeah, I sure can.
And then, EJ, can you
this
comment on...
This is Kevin Greenstein from the New York Sun. Glenn, just wanted to get your sense on Wade Redden, what he's going to add to the Rangers' blue line core, and what you're thinking moving forward with regard to the defense.
Well, he's an experienced defenseman. He's been an all-star twice in the league. He's... in our opinion, the best first passer in the game today. He moves the puck up exceptionally. He's somebody that we had targeted immediately. He was our number one guy in defense. as well as Roosevelt. We wanted to get them both signed, and we did. And we're quite happy that we've got them. And we think that it's going to help move the puck to the forwards as well as anybody in the league today.
Now,
there you go.
Well, I guess that says it all.
We got EJ laughing on that one.
Yeah, I would just say this. I mean, listen, Glenn Sather is a guy that's already in the Hall of Fame for what he did in Edmonton. And there's no denying it. I don't want to kind of, I've been on this thing with Glenn Sather for almost 10 years now, and I don't want to, this is a guy that has had a terrific career up to a certain point. And I just think that, when you listen to those comments that were made at the time of the signing, again, I just think it's indicative of the fact that Glenn was just not up to date on the player. And
right.
when you don't know where the players are at any particular moment in their career, that can be, in this case, can be disastrous for you in a salary cap situation, because now you're locked in with a guy. I mean, I guess the alternative that you have is maybe you can just dispatch him down to Hartford and be done with him. But, I mean, you're still paying that money for the next several years. So, I just think when I listen to those words, it just reminds me how much I feel that Glenn and some of the people within the group there are just not on top of what's going on in the league on a day-to-day-to-day basis. And I think, really, if you don't know the players, it's a big problem. And I'll add this to that, because it's not just – Glenn Sather is not on an island by himself in this regard. I mean, look at what's going on with Brian Burke in Toronto, for example. I don't think Brian Burke is a very well-respected manager around the league. He won a Stanley Cup a couple of years ago in Anaheim. I don't know if Brian is all that well-versed in the players as they stand in the league right now when you look at some of the signings he made in the offseason and where the game is, because he got bigger and slower on defense. He added nothing to his front line. He ended up trading away valuable top draft picks to get Phil Kessel, who's a nice player, but again, as I mentioned with Marian Gaborik, he's a winger, and he is not
right.
The part of your team that you're the core of your team that you're going to build a championship squad around, and that's really one of the reasons why the Bruins were willing to make that move. So, for me, and I think this is the case with a lot of guys, is that some of these teams are just not up to the minute, to the day-to-day, on where guys are in their career, because it changes. There's guys that, sometimes it happens overnight. They're just not as good a player anymore. And you have to know the players. In this business, in hockey, just like in the other sports, the players and knowledge of the players and who they are and what they do and what they can bring to your team is critical. And those
right.
comments by Glenn at that time tells me that he was not, the fact that he would say he's the best first passer in the game, at that time he wasn't. I mean, to me, when you're talking about something like that, maybe you're talking about a Chris Pronger or someone of that
That's
name.
What
I
was
going to
say.
Yeah, it's not.
It wasn't
Wade Redd then, and it's not certainly not Wade Redd now.
Yeah, I mean, Wade
Redd
is
not even he's not even the best first passer on the team.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would also say this about the general manager's job. This is a really, in professional sports now, the general manager's job is one of the most difficult jobs that you have in sports, because there are so many things that you're dealing with. And you've got to hire the people. You've got to be willing to give them the opportunity to do their job. You've got to be able to come in at the right moment and balance all these things. And it seems like to me, it's a 24-hour a day, 7 day a week, 365 day a year job these days. And I look at Glenn, and I think Glenn would like to win just as much as the next guy, but is he willing to pay the price in time and effort that maybe he did as a younger man? I don't know. I mean, I think the answer to that question is probably no.
Yeah. You were very diplomatic, and I'm going to tell you what I think.
Okay, go ahead.
We say there is in Banff for most of the time. He doesn't come into New York till training camp starts. He's not a hands-on guy, and this is why he makes statements like this. And really, is there any more dysfunctional organization? And I don't mean to bash on our Rangers because they're doing bad, but really, is there a more dysfunctional organization in hockey than the New York Rangers? I mean, for 20 years. Really, even with the cup, it's dysfunctional. I mean,
yeah,
they mortgage the future. I mean, it's got to be a joke amongst the hockey experts. I mean,
well,
I
would say that there's several teams in the league that have had trouble. I mean, you just look around, and I have a kind of a running joke with a friend of mine who is that has been in the league before, and he's had worked with a couple of different organizations, and I always, when we see somebody get hired or a situation like you're describing, we just laugh and say, like in Detroit, Kenny Holland calls everybody together and they all go into a room and they just shut the door and they lock the windows and they laugh for about 20 minutes and then they come out and they put the straight face back on and, you know, and they go along, because some of the teams that do it right just have to laugh at some of the things that go on with some of these franchises in the league. And, you know, and certainly the Rangers have had, you know, it just seems like they're always going in a different direction. And for me, when you come in as a manager, you come in, you want to set the, you want, it's like any business. It's who are we, what are we, what kind of team do we want to be, what kind of players do we need to have to be that kind of team. It has to start with that mission statement at the top, and then everybody working towards that singular goal. And, you know, certainly the Rangers have had, they just seem like they're always going in a different direction. One year they're, you know, the European Czech team. Then the next year they're kind of a hybrid of a European and North American team. And then the next year they're more of a North American team. I mean, what are they? Do they want to know? This year with John Tortorella, they want to kind of be an up-tempo, fast team. I mean, at some point, when you're making these decisions, you have to decide what you want to be. And then it takes time to acquire all those players and to develop those players and to make that system all work. And when you're constantly changing the plan, it just seems like you never can really get out of your own way. So, you know, I think that to me is when I look at the Rangers, you know, that's the thing. And every year it's kind of a new group, and every year it's a new kind of direction. And I just don't think you get anywhere, you know, long term by doing it that way. And, you know, Just look across the river, I mean, with the Devils. I mean, it's one focus there, and it's been that way for a long time, and players come and go. They've got guys on their back line. I mean, their defense, when you look at their group of defensemen, it's certainly no better than the group the Rangers have, and it might actually be worse, and yet the Devils find ways to win. So I think that's the biggest problem when I look at the Rangers, is they just don't have a singular identity, and they don't have a singular plan. They don't have a willingness to stick to that.
You know, that's for sure. I mean, you know, and it's funny. Do you think maybe this plays a little bit part and parcel to why the Rangers struggle with direction and operating like other teams do? You know, a lot of teams nowadays, you know, they got to go out and they got to work with the community and get everybody excited about their team and kind of build a personality for their team so the fans can kind of emulate with and kind of, you know, get kind of a rapport with, whereas the Ranger fans will be there no matter what team they throw on the ice and are going to buy into whatever nonsense that you know. I mean, we're gluttons for punishment. And do you think that plays a part in it?
I don't think it helps, because when ownership knows that the fan base is always there, there's not a need to make any move. I mean, I think really – again, with all due respect to Glenn for being in the Hall of Fame and having won as many Stanley Cups as he has won in Edmonton, in a different era, I think that really Glenn, I mean, he's just not suited for the job right now, and they need to get somebody in there that's, you know, I think younger and more eager and has a plan, and it can explain that plan to ownership, and ownership is going to let that guy, you know, go about putting that plan into play and giving them time to have it work out. I think that, you know, that's part of it when the fans are always going to be there. But I think the other part of it is that, you know, the ownership situation isn't very good either. I mean, Jim Dolan is kind of a, you know, I don't know how to describe this guy. I guess I can kind of be insulting, but I don't really know the guy. I just know that he seems to be very, like, loyal to a fault, and that's saying, I guess that's an understatement, with a guy like Glenn. And I think, you know, we don't, it's not just, you know, with Jim Dolan, there's other guys in other sports, you know, around these, in, you know, the different leagues, and you see a similar thing. And, you know, I always say the same thing about, if I ever bought a team or if somebody came to me and said, I bought a team, what should be the first thing I should do? I would just always tell him to call Mike Ilitch in Detroit and set up a meeting and sit down with him. Because Mike learned the hard way in Detroit, because that took 15 years to get right. And, you know, I just think that, you know, the key is that, you know, Jim is committed to Glenn. He's not going to, he doesn't seem any willingness to change and to move away from Glenn. And until, you know, he does that, the Rangers, it seems like, are just going to be a team that's kind of going to be spinning like they are now. And if they're lucky, maybe they'll kind of land on their feet 1 year. But, you know, luck is really not the way to operate in pro sports. It's a really competitive business, and the way you want to do it is to have a, like I said over and over, to have a plan and execute it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're saying, and I concur, it's kind of, you know, listen, it's a young man, and it's a not such a young man's game as from the GM point, but you got to be hungry, and
yeah.
You got to know what's going on in today's hockey. You cannot be thinking 10 years in the past of what's going on. You've got to know what's available out there. And I also wanted to get your view on Gordy Clark. He had a really good draft, I thought, in the last draft. What do you think about Gordy Clark and what he brings to the Rangers organization?
Well, I have to say up front, I like Gordy Clark a lot. I've gotten to know him over the years, and I always enjoy seeing him, and I always enjoy chatting with him, and I think he's a guy that – certainly knows a lot about hockey. So, I mean, I'm not out there in the, you know, going to junior games night after night after night, or college games or prep school games and watching these kids. I would just, all you can really react to with Gordy and with the Rangers scouting is, you know, what players they selected. And I think they've had a couple of hits, you know, certainly they've had some good selections, but, you know, some of their key opportunities to really make hay in the last several years, they've missed on, and you know, they haven't really had anybody to speak of that's been that later round pick that has been that kind of late bloomer that they've been able to uncover and to really be a guy that would come in and be a top six type player, or, you know, to be a real stud defenseman, you know, outside of what happened with Henrik Lundqvist. That goes all the way back to really Neil Smith scouts, because that was after Neil was let go, but it was certainly his scouts that were doing the drafting that year. So, you know, like I said, I like Gordy. I think he knows the game. He's been around it a long time. But I think when you look at the, you know, with the Rangers scouting, I mean, all you can look at is, you know, what they've done on draft day, and, you know, they've had some good ones, but I would say more, you know, when I look at the last 10 years, more often than not, you know, there's been more, I would say there's been more misses than hits, and there haven't been really any big hits. And that's, you know, that's what hurts you.
Right.
You have to be able to, somewhere in that area, and it hurts a lot of franchises. I mean, it's not an exact science when you think about drafting kids who are 17, 18 years old. And, you know, we could go through about 20, 25 teams in this league who still don't seem very good at it, but, you know, the Rangers just haven't been able to find those type of players, and, you know, that hurts your organization, there's no question.
Now, EJ, let me ask you, you talk about how the Rangers continuously overhauling their roster, and the way this roster is constructed now, it certainly looks to us that either the roster is a bad fit for the coach or the coach is a bad fit for the roster. So chances are they're looking at another overhaul at the end of this season, the way it looks right now. Would you say that's accurate?
Well, I mean, they still, you know, as I mentioned before, they don't have a number one center. So, I mean, they've got to try to find a number one center at some point. You just can't win. I just don't see how they go forward at this point. I don't know who's coming. I look at Hartford. I don't see the guy down there. So, you know, if you have to go and get one of those guys, I don't know, how do you do it? I mean, you have to hope that maybe, you know, it's a team that has some kind of a financial issue is looking to move a guy, or somebody, a guy is unhappy in a certain situation, then you could maybe take advantage of that. But, you know, I get the sense looking at it, you're right. I mean, I just laughed. The other night, for example, I guess Enver Leason didn't play a single minute in the game in Pittsburgh, and John Tortorella didn't speak very highly of him after the game. And I just kind of laughed, because, again, it goes back to knowing the players. You know, I've seen Enver Leason play a couple of years in Phoenix, This is a kind of floater kind of guy. He's got some skill. He's a really good skater, but he's never done anything in the National Hockey League to make you think that, hey, we need to go out and get this guy and that he is going to be a real helpful player on our roster. Again, what is he? Is he a guy that is he gritty in any way? I mean, has he shown that he can really perform at the National Hockey League level? I think the answer to those questions are no. The thing he brings is that he has a modicum of speed and skill that he hasn't been able to tap into yet. And yet here he is on the Rangers roster and, you know, in a situation now with John Tortorella having him on the bench and not playing him and Torts is, you know, trying to figure out how to get something out of him. Maybe if they had been watching him closely in Phoenix, they would realize that maybe no one's going to get anything out of him and maybe he's just not going to – the skill that he does have is just not going to translate to the National Hockey League. So I think that, you know, you are, you know, to answer the question, yeah, you're probably looking at – you know, a bunch more moves coming up in the future because, you know, they're not coming, from what I can see, you're not having a major rebuild coming out of Hartford. And, you know, some of the guys that you have there now are guys that really in the long run are not going to be guys that help you win.
And the thing that we talked about with the Leeson benching the other night was that out of all the players on the Rangers that seem to be underachieving right now, it just seemed odd. He seemed to be an odd choice to make an example out of.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's an easy target, that's for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, a hot button issue, if you will, among Ranger fans right now is Chris Drury. You know, what the Rangers are getting out of him, you know, he's not scoring. And, you know, obviously he's coming off, he was out for, you know, a couple of weeks with the injury, but, you know, he's not producing and he doesn't seem to bring a lot of fire to the Rangers as a captain when they need it. You know, we talked before about getting, you know, somebody standing up for his teammates. And I think that comes from a lot of that has to come from on ice leadership. And I don't see that from Chris Drury. And, you know, I've talked about it numerous times on our show that, you know, I don't see, you know, Chris Drury, he's not a good captain. That's my opinion.
Well, I just don't see.
Go ahead. No, that's
all
right.
I would just say this. I mean, I think Chris Drury is really in a no-win situation in some ways here because, first of all, he's being overpaid for what he is. So that's the first mark against Chris Drury, at least amongst fans and people who observe things, is that, you know, he's clearly not, you know, he's not a value at his current contract. So that's the first problem. Secondly, on the roster that's currently, you know, made up, Chris is really, I mean, there's no support whatsoever for Chris Drury. I mean, Chris Drury has thrived in situations where he is a support player. He is the guy behind the Sakic and Forsberg. He's the guy maybe alongside of the Briers and the guys they had in Buffalo. They had a nice mix of players in Buffalo. So I think all those things really in New York kind of work against Chris. I think he's a real competitor. I think he's a real competitive guy. I think he does really care, and he does want to make it happen. You know, when you say a good captain, bad captain, there's guys lead in different ways. You know, certainly like you look at a Scott Niedermeyer, for example, like this is one of the most serene type guys you'll ever see. But, you know, the old saying is still waters run deep. And, you know, I think Chris is kind of that kind of guy, too. He's not somebody who is going to grab you by the lapel. He's going to try to lead more by example. But I think it's hard for him to do that in New York because, again, he's just not supported on this roster. He's the guy that really is the third-line center at this point of his career. And he could be a darn good one if he was behind two other guys that were, you know, the real horses that lead your team. And he'd be a real helpful player in that regard. But you can't pay guys who are really – you know, maybe a second, probably more of a third-line center. You can't pay those kind of guys $6 and $7 million a year, and I think that's at the heart of what Chris Drury's problem is, that he is just misslotted and, you know, in a bad situation with the Rangers. And if he would go to a good team that had a couple of good centers in front of him, you'd see a different kind of player there. That's just my opinion.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why we had you on this show, to give us your opinion. You give it to us, and we love it. I'm telling you.
All right.
You know, and, now, and you, go ahead.
Well, I want to ask about John Tortorella, but go ahead and finish your thought now.
No, I was just going to say, I actually was going to get on the Tortorella subject. I mean, don't you see just a giant disconnect between coach and team right now. You know, we're starting to hear rumblings that perhaps Tortorella and Lundqvist, there may be a rift there that they're just not on really speaking terms as far as, you know, it's basically Benoit Ole, the goalie coach, is really the go-between. And Henrik doesn't look happy out there, EJ. I mean, he's storming off the ice. He's not a happy camper. And maybe he could lead. I mean, you know, I saw John Tortorella in his short stint as a Ranger coach way back when I think it was Ron Lowe got fired, one of those guys. You know, Colin Campbell might have been. It might have even been way back, whatever.
Yeah, I think it was John Buckler.
Oh, Buckler, that's right. Oh, the great
John
Buckler.
Buckler
era. How could I forget?
And,
you know, what do you think, you know, a lot of Ranger fans say this guy's a bully, that he is, you know, his coaching. We know these coaches like Keenan, they wear their welcomes out fast. What do you know about Tortorella? Do you think, is he, I guess what I'm trying to say, do you think he's kind of imposing his will on the players, and rather than looking at the big picture, he's looking to teach players lessons individually?
Well, John Tortorella is kind of an interesting character. I mean, he's clearly a very passionate guy. And, you know, I think that John worked best in Tampa really when he had Craig Ramsey as his assistant coach, because Craig Ramsey, first of all, is one of the sharpest hockey guys in the business, and he's been working as an assistant in Boston the last couple of years for Claude Julien, and he's done a really good job of working with Claude Julien and helping the Bruins improve. But he was a great foil for John Tortorella, because Torts is so fiery and so passionate that he gets going, and Craig is very serene and very, you know, he's able to kind of be calm. And they were, you know, they were a good pair in that way. And I think it was good for John to have him there. And I think as time went on, Craig Ramsey really had a hard time working with John, too. And that's one of the reasons why he eventually left and then went on to Boston. But, you know, in Tampa, John Tortorella, when he won the Stanley Cup, again, when you look at his team, he had that number one center in LeCavalier. He had some great other pieces there at forward, and Saint-Louis and Brad Richards. I mean, that was a terrific group of forwards. And then you had Danny Boyle on defense, who was a really legit number one defender, puck mover, and he had Nick Hobbie-Boulin in goal. So he had those tenants that I mentioned earlier about a goalie, your centers, and your
right.
At least the number one to, you know, to set your table of your defenseman. Here in New York, he doesn't have, you know, he's really coming to a situation where he doesn't have a lot to really build with at this point. And so I think he is going to be increasingly frustrated by the situation. And he wants to play a certain way, and I don't think, as you guys have mentioned, I don't think that, you know, he has the ability to play that way with the guys that he's currently got on his team. And that's forcing him into kind of change his dynamic. And he's never been, you know, talk about him and Lundqvist, he's never been a guy that really gets along all that well with goalies. I mean, Nick Hobbie-Boulin couldn't stand him in Tampa. They managed to live together and won a Stanley Cup. He didn't really do too well with the goalies after that. I mean, you remember the John Grahams and the different guys they had down there.
Right.
They had some bad goalies. I don't think the coach and the goaltender have to be and have a love affair with one another. I mean, if things are going well, it doesn't really much matter. But it's when things are tough that everybody brings it up. I mean, last year, for example, in Carolina, when Paul Maurice went in there, you know, we had him on the radio and asked him about his relationship with Cam Ward, and it wasn't a bad relationship. He just said he didn't really have any. He said he really just told me he was playing, and that was it. And he didn't really spend a lot. And he kind of made light of it. He said, you know, I just don't want to kind of screw him up. He's doing well, and we just put him in, and that's the end of it. And, you know, so really, there doesn't have to be this affection between goalie and coach. It's nice if, you know, if people work together and get along and can sing a song and everybody's happy. But it doesn't have to be that way. But, you know, right now they're struggling, and there's a lot of pressure on Henrik Lundqvist, because beyond Marion Gaborik, no one else seems to score on the Rangers. So, you know, and Henrik is struggling right now. I think Henrik is probably, when I look at some of these goals that he's given up over his shoulder, I mean, he's probably leaning forward a little too much. He's probably not flattening out his torso. When you're a butterfly goalie, you've got to keep your back, like, rock straight so you can catch, you know, some of those pucks that go over your shoulder are going to hit your shoulder, or they're going to be, you know, that you're going to have a little bit of a chance to get a piece of them somehow. I laugh when I see some of the stuff in the papers from the, some of the guys that are covering the Rangers talking about, like, the buzz around the league is to go over Lundqvist's shoulder. I mean, the buzz about every butterfly goalie in the National Hockey League is to go over his shoulder. I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, it's a simple percentage game that those guys play. It's a drop-and-block style. And they're basically telling the shooter, listen, if you can hit that corner over my shoulder, God bless you, I'll take the puck out of the net. But I think 95% of the time you're not going to be able to do it. And that's why these guys play that style. So, you know, I guess getting to it with Torts, you know, I think Henrik's going to have to work that out with Allaire, and I think that they will because Henrik has shown the track record of being a successful goalie. But I do think John Tortorella will probably drive himself pretty batty this year with that team because it's not the way he wants to play. And I think really that's what happened to Tom Rennie over time last year is that eventually he started to realize when the team couldn't score last year that, you know, my only chance here is to try to really shut things down and play defensively. And eventually, you know, I think that Tom really lost confidence in a lot of the players on the team. And that led to them really kind of tuning him out, which eventually led to him being moved out. So John Tortorella, we'll see how it goes. But I think it's going to be a rocky road if things don't get better soon.
It's just amazing to me that, you know, you have Tortorella takes over Rennie's team last year, right? And, you know, even though they played that defensive slumber party, defensive thing, and, you know, it was 0-0 going into most third periods, he takes over that kind of team, I think, which was a hard-working team and a focused team on their task. And what you have, Tortorella comes in and takes that team, who I think mentally bought into what he was saying as much as he could get across in that short amount of time, and they responded well. They responded well. And then now you see Tortorella brings in his up-tempo guys, gets rid of all those guys, the Korpikoskis, the Betts, the, you know, the other guys, and the Schustroms. And now he's got all his guys in here, supposedly, the up-tempo guys, like, you know, the end real, the never listened, I mean the end releases. And it's a total, I mean, it's totally disconnected. It's totally inept. It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have his kind of team. I mean, John Tortorella really, when you look at his teams, especially in Tampa, he wants to play his top six or nine forwards. You know, he wants to play them out. He wants those guys on the ice all the time, and he wants to give a few minutes to the fourth line, and then that's it, really. And the Rangers have one top six forward, you know, as far as I can tell. I mean, I don't count Chris Drury as a top six forward. I don't count Ryan Callahan as a top six forward. I don't count Randy Vinci at this point of his career as a top six forward. I guess, you know, Vinny Prosco is really kind of on the borderline of that, I mean, at his age and where he is in his career. So I guess maybe you can say he's like a half. But after that,
he's playing with Gabrick. He's the top six forward,
yeah,
but anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, that's like my necessity. I mean, you know, they're lucky, as it turns out, they're really lucky that they ended up grabbing him because, you know, and that's a guy, too. It's funny when they picked him up. I mean, he had a real falling out with John Tortorella in Tampa, you know, to the point where after a game, when he was the star of the game and he was interviewed on the ice, he basically, you know, in no uncertain terms, kind of told John Tortorella to stick it on the PA. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of funny that he ended up back with Tortorella in New York, but he has been, I have to say, I mean, they've been really fortunate to have him because, you know, at least it gives Gabrick somebody that has, you know, a kind of an ability to play with him and try to get him to puck and help him a little bit there. I mean, you know, like a guy like Kotalik has helped him a little bit on the power play because he can shoot the puck, but he's a guy you can't really play at 5-on-5. He's so terrible defensively. So, boy, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's, you know, John Tortorella likes to have those couple of guys. He probably looks back at Tampa now when he had St. Louis and Le Cavalier and Brad Richards and probably shakes his head and realizes what a good thing he had there. But, you know, he likes to play those guys like that. And with this team, you have to adjust to what you have in front of you. And I don't know how good John is at that. I think John wants to do it one way, and I don't know if he's going to be able to adjust and do it another way.
Yeah, no, I think that really is the crux of the problem, is that he's a, you know, he's an immovable object as far as his philosophy goes. We're seeing these players getting played into the ground. They're not carrying a seventh defenseman, which doesn't make any sense to me. Just from the perspective that if you have that guy waiting in the wings to press you, you make sure you come to play every night. If Michael Roosevelt knows that he's going to get the night off, he don't play so well. I don't understand that. And I got to tell you, I mean, the thing that perturbs me the most about this is that you have almost a PlayStation 3 hockey attitude about the center ice position, that you can just throw anybody in at center, and it doesn't matter. And the Rangers are such a terrible team on faceoffs, and you know how important having a faceoff, a team that could win faceoffs. It's one of the most unheralded parts of the game, and they're awful at it. And yeah, he's throwing Aaron Voros in at the center ice position. I mean, it's a joke.
You don't have to win all your faceoffs, but you have to win a couple of key ones every night. So it's nice to have. It's nice to have a guy that you can count on to win some draws. I mean, you can even see, I mean, Sidney Crosby, it tells you how much Sidney Crosby thinks about, you know, how important faceoffs are, that he's really worked at that since he came into the league, and now he's a top 10 faceoff guy. So, you know, it is another important element to the game. And, you said it. I mean, look at the teams that win the Stanley Cup, and just look at their teams and look at their rosters. They're strong at center. They usually have one or two really good defensemen that are at the top of their lineup, and they have if not a great goalie, a good one, or a guy that plays well in big games. I mean, it's not brain surgery when it comes to figuring out what it takes to build to build the core of a great team, but there's 30 teams and there's only so many really talented players. And, like I say about, John Tortorella, his system is great. As long as you have, Vinny LeCavalier and Brad Richards that you can lean on to play 23, 24 minutes a night, and you have Nick Hobby-Boulin in goal, and you have Danny Boyle moving the puck up the ice. I mean, it's a great
system. Well, how many teams got that? Not many.
Not many.
Well, all right. Well, EJ, we're about to run out of time here. I want to thank you for joining us tonight, and maybe we'll have you on sometime in the new year and talk to us again.
Hopefully we can talk about the Rangers when things are going better, because I'll say this, as much as I grew up, obviously, as I mentioned, not rooting for the team, I do like to see the Rangers do well. It's good for the league, and, it's a great franchise and with a lot of terrific fans, and it would be – I think they deserve better, and hopefully at some point, they'll get that thing going right in the right direction for more than just one or two years at a time.
Well,
thanks,
EJ,
so
we're only 30. We're only 39 years away from our next cup, so I guess that's
there
when
you
we'll
go.
Talk. All right, EJ, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
All right. Take care.
Take
guys.
Care, my friend.
Bye. Okay, so we got about 2 minutes to go, and then we'll just let it spill into the podcast. If you guys want to call in, as many as you want to call in, go right ahead. 646-478-4692. If we run over, we'll just run it into the podcast, and anybody that's not on the air or on the phone, you can listen to it later on after it archives. So if you guys want to call in, go right ahead. And I think we have 201-257. Is this Ricky?
Yeah, that's me. What's up, guys?
Hey, Rick. Good evening. How are you?
How are you?
Good, good.
I'll tell you, he just makes fantastic points, man, which I think we've been making on the show for the last 2 months. The system is too complicated for the talent we have. Rennie was the perfect coach for this team. Played defensive, win 3-2. So what? We're bored, we'll complain, but we make the playoffs, and we're not going to do it under this jerk.
Well, it's funny. He's naming off all the things you need to win a Stanley Cup, and I'm just thinking, yeah, we don't have that. Yeah, we don't have that.
we don't have that.
All right, just real quick, we're going to bring in Paulie D and Mandar real quick. And like I said, we're going to go to podcast. I just want to remind you guys before we stop streaming, tomorrow night on on Blue Shirt Banner Radio, Joe Patterson will talk to Mouth and Mandar. And then next Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, former Ranger player, GM, and coach, Emil the Cat Francis will join Mouth and I for the show, and then all the other guests we went over. So for those of you that So for those of you that are gonna stop listening when we stop streaming, thanks to everybody and have a great night. And any, like I said, anybody else that wants to call in, we'll put you on and you just stay on with us for the podcast. We'll keep talking. So we got Paulie on the line and we got Mandar. Mandar, Paulie, good evening, guys. How's it going?
Hey, guys. There's a Paulie and me love fest in the chat room now, huh?
What's not to love about Paulie D?
Oh, that's what I always say.
Paulie, great show last night with Katsu. You guys were great. It was good stuff.
I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. You really helped us out, too. I have to say, EJ, I mean, the guy just nailed, you know, he just nailed everything down. I mean, everything he said made a lot of sense. Great hockey mind, as you can tell. He wouldn't be doing what he's doing. But, you know, guys, I hate to say this, but you have to agree with pretty much everything he said, you know, along the lines of New York Rangers. I think one of the biggest problems, and I've said this before, is I thought he made a great point when he said you got to stop changing what you're doing. Either we're going into the Tortorella, into the trap, or we're going to go with this speed game, or, you know, you got to pick a style and stick with it because it takes years to develop talent, and we've talked about this. Guys, why are guys doing so bad? Why does Girardi look so bad? Why does Staal look so bad? Because they learned in one style for so long and now are trying to learn a completely different style. And I think that's
Sanguinetti too.
Why this team looks so bad. They're lost. They have no clue. Defensively, they're horrendous. When we lost by 8 goals the other night, I mean, you can't let guys like Crosby have all that kind of room. And I think this system dictates that. It's wide open. It's fiery. It's fun to watch if you have the players. We don't have Brad Richards. We don't have Vinny LeCavalier. We don't have Martin St. Louis. And we don't have a guy like Dan Boyle. So you need to start over again.
And, Paulie, you were talking about guys that were drafted for one system. And you said that coming out of training camp, you said it. You talked about Sanguinetti, that he might, you know, as far as being a Rennie-style player. And I mean, you know, it's still a long way from saying whether or not he fits. But, you know, it's just something that bears mentioning because you brought it up again.
I think, you know, we're very lucky with a very unique kid in Del Zotto. And I think someone like Del Zotto is very unique for the fact that he's got a lot of raw, just raw, tappable talent. The kid's fast. He's smart. He's got a fantastic pass. Those things, they are teachable, but you also have to have pure, raw talent to have that kind of stuff as well, to develop it. But, you know, you look around the team, and a lot of these guys have developed into a certain system, and EJ makes a great point. You got to stick with the system. And the point is taken right there. Look, and we always talk about the Devils. The team sucks. They have nobody. And every year they're there no matter what, whether it's Clemenson in goal or Brodeur. I mean, come on. You got to look at it. Last year, how many games did Clemenson play? Whether he played good, bad, or in between, the system is the same, and there's support there. And it's one thing that this team just does not do. They don't stick to a system year after year, and that's why the Devils are there every year, because they train the same system year after year no matter what, and that's why they're always there. It's just a fantastic point.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't one person who didn't think when Brodeur went down last year that they weren't done. I mean, nobody thought, you know, everybody figured they were, you know, once Brodeur got hurt, they figured the Devils were done, and they weren't. They kept winning. They just kept doing it. Mandar, you're oddly quiet.
I told you, it's the love fest with Paulie. I'm agreeing with Paulie now. I've seen too much of this evidence to go against, but I still challenge this. What is the Torts system? Supposedly, from what I understand, and Math has been making great points all you know, during this time by saying, you know, safe is supposed to be death. Well, I don't see safe as death. I see disorganization. I see players not knowing where to be on the ice. We were going well in the beginning when they had guys on the puck. It was like challenging the puck before it came in the zone. I don't see that now. I'm going back to all the old horrible forechecking ways where you send one guy in, and as soon as the puck starts coming out the other way, the second guy goes in. So now we have two forwards trapped in the offensive zone, and they gain our zone way too easily now. And defensemen are back, and you saw what Roosevelt did yesterday. My God, if he could have backed all the way up to Sabaros, he would have.
he would have had his tookus in one of my pizzas up here at Sabaros.
Seriously?
You're right. That defense is backing in. I don't see pressure on the puck once the two men going in. And, you know, and Paulie, a lot of the hockey that Paulie was afraid of, you know, with the Gilroy going up ice, I don't see any of that now. What I see, and this is another thing, I just don't see any passion. Is it me or is it passionless out there?
That's true.
Maybe it's they come out every game and I just don't see any passion. I mean, I see Callahan every night battling. You know, no matter if he's scoring or not, he's battling every game. I give it to him. But, you know, it really does fall on Tortorella. He supposedly brought all these guys in. He got rid of all the Rennie guys. He brought these Leeson in. And listen, I thought Ember played pretty well in the first set games. He brought in all his guys that are supposed to be, yes, they're not LeCavaliers, they're not Boyles, but they're kind of like, I guess, miniature types of those guys.
Well, Lundstedt has
is it me or is it the Rangers organization for years is one extreme to another? You know, you had the Roger Nielsen era when the guys came in and we banged the crap out of people and we had a big, tough lineup, Domi, Chris King, Millett, Koser, and we won down low. Then we won a cup. Then we went to a very European-style team with the Czechoslovakians, and it was almost like watching an international team. Then we go now, and we've never gone with a North American big, tough lineup. You know, you look at a team like Calgary. I got the NHL package. They're the best team in the NHL to watch. They hit, they score, they move the puck, they bank. We don't have passion because we don't have guys that play tough hockey.
Right.
We got Aaron Barros, and the guy goes to throw a check. He misses by 6 feet, and the puck and the momentum change. We don't have that.
Totsy's favorite player.
You know, Avery, the last five games, has been Sean Avery. And what a difference. He stands out like nobody else on this team.
No, you made the point in the chat room is, when was the last time we traded to get a big North American, a North American farm boy in here rather than some fancy dance Euro?
Mouth.
We're also going after the Euros. We're not bringing in Tim Kerr. He'll be on the show in 2 weeks.
We had a chance last year at the trade deadline. We got Morris from Phoenix. Phoenix had just got Carcillo, and they had Proust, the kid from Calgary, that they had traded back for. So they were looking to dump a tough guy. And instead, the Rangers turned around and didn't take the tough guy. Philadelphia ends up with Carcillo, who don't – trust me, he's not a great hockey player, but he puts up 10 goals, 15 assists a year. And he gets 300 minutes in penalties. And he's a guy that the Garden crowd would have loved. You drop him on a line like Avery, Callahan, and Corsillo, and the Garden is rocking every night. But we never get that guy. Instead, we take a Leeson, who's a project, might score 25 goals, or he might score 5, and now with Tortorella benching him, he might leave for Russia to go play in the KHL.
Well, you're right. I mean, again, and with the reclamations, they should stop. They can't even... The players they get, they can't even take care of, and they want to transform players. The players they come here are, regress in their talent, and we're going to make somebody better. They're out of their minds. And you're right. You know, one guy, and I know you like this guy, Rick. I know he's hurt now, but if we had a guy like David Clarkson on this team, that's the guy you want. You want to load your team up with those guys and have a skill line in the first line. But load them up with big North American, big guys who are going to chip in and be tough and have that work ethic. I don't
have
see
I
any work ethic
preached
on the team.
You're preaching to the choir, bro. I've been crying all summer long about the same thing. And, Mouth, you're the one who was saying to me, well, the game is changing.
I said with the defense thing.
With whatever. Get me some meat out there. Get me somebody who's going to punish you. Get me somebody who's going to make you pay. I don't care what position they play. I don't care if it's Henrik Lundqvist. I want blood on the ice occasionally. We're not getting it with guys with Leeson. And the guys that are that do play like that are, at best, they're middleweights. Callahan, I love the kid. The kid needs 60 pounds to make a difference, though. He's tiny. Avery's a middleweight, 190 pounds. He's nothing.
I want to see us go up with John Stott. Remember that name, John Stott.
You want to put 60 pounds on Callahan and make him look like me.
We need some weight out there, guys.
North
American style.
I want to get John Scott from the Minnesota Wild. 6'7", defenseman who plays the wing. He's a mean guy. He's got a short fuse. He's knocking people out, but he plays a regular shift in a very defensive style. And he's a guy, that's some beef. We need beef, and I agree. Our guys are 5'9", that throwing our weight around.
Exactly.
Well, I thought EJ made the best point, and when we talked to him in person, he said this to us, that Ranger fans overrate their guys. And maybe we think that Ryan Callahan is a second-line player when really he's a third-line player. And maybe we think, yeah. I know you disagree with this, Rick, about Brandon Dubinsky, but maybe Brandon Dubinsky is the third-line player on most teams.
You know,
I mean,
when
what do you guys
said,
think about that?
When he said – the Rangers have one top six forward. That really kind of hit home with me. I was like, God damn it, he's right. we only have one top six forward, and we've got about 8 third line forwards. It kind of reminds me of the Mets in the mid 90s where they had a whole team of DHs. It's kind of like that, you know. I mean, he hit a lot of nails right on the head. That's for sure.
You know what? I think Brandon will become a number two, number one line center. But I also think that it's going to take a little time. Listen, I got to be the first to tell you that I thought Brandon was pretty darn good with Jaromír Jágr. I mean, to play on someone's line like that, I thought he was pretty damn good. Is he putting a puck in the net the way we hoped? No. But I think he does the little things right. But it's a great point, Mouth. You know, anywhere else do they develop him third line at best for the first couple of years? And then, you know, once he gets, if he does get a scoring touch, you know, because that's the big difference here. That's exactly what we're talking about. First line centers bury the puck. You got to be able to score goals and do the little things right and win faceoffs and be smart defensively and be, you know. But Brandon Dubinsky has his game together. The only thing he doesn't have is the most important unit we need from him. Goal scoring. He can kill penalties. He can pay the power play. He'll stick up for his teammates. He's strong on the puck. He's got all those little things that you need. But more importantly, you got to be able to put the puck in the net.
Yeah, you can't have 12 goals. You can't go 23 games without a goal like last year.
And I think a little bit of it for Dubinsky right now is I think Tortorella's got a hair up his ass for Dubinsky because of that holdout. And I think he's got Dubinsky, I think he's got his head, at least before he got hurt, I think he's got his head screwed up a little bit at this point.
Preach on.
The bully strikes again.
I mean, what do you guys think about that? Do you agree, disagree? I just think, regardless of what we were told by a couple of different people, I think Tortorella's definitely got a hair up his ass on Dubinsky because he looked at Dubinsky as one of his building blocks, one of the kids that he was going to be able to move forward with. And then he had the holdout. He missed a week of camp, and then he benched him into one game. I think honestly, Dubinsky's head a little screwed up right now. And hopefully Dubinsky comes back from his injury. And I haven't heard like anything as far as when it's going to be, but hopefully he comes back soon and he's all right, because at this point they really need him. They need him.
I think they're looking. The players are looking at Tortorella now behind the bench, going, "What the hell is this guy doing? We have 10 different left wingers playing on the first line. Every other shift, there was another left winger playing. You can't look for consistency when you're making changes constantly like that. You're benching a young player." An entire game, not even letting him go on the ice. You're benching you had a power play that was working with Kotalik on the point, so you want to make a point to Kotalik by sitting him down even on power plays, and now you have Drury out there. He's making buffoon moves, and the players have got to be looking at this going, what are we supposed to do here? This guy, I'm telling you, last week, it's funny, Mouth asked the question last week, do we think that Tortorella has a chance to get fired this year? And we were all saying, no, he's got to stay the year. And I just remember saying, unless he does something totally stupid, which he is capable of, they'll give him a whole year. He's losing the team real quick from the stupid moves to no consistency. He's doing things, I think, in the wrong ways. Fine, you want to sit out, listen. Don't tell me you didn't have another option. You knew you were going to do it. Bring somebody else up. You scratched Boyle, and you left another kid sitting on the bench. Yep. What is this mess in this guy's mind?
Well, you know what, guys, too, is he has he's lost Lundqvist, and I talked to Mouth about this last night. I'm not going to divulge my source, but Mouth knows, and he can tell you guys later. Lundqvist does not like John Tortorella. I mean, and it is really, really getting to a point where they're not speaking. They communicate now through a lair. Tortorella's pushed the wrong buttons with Lundqvist, and Lundqvist hates him. And it came to a point where I was told that if Lundqvist was a free agent and Tortorella was the coach, Lundqvist would be gone at the end of the year. And you go back to talking about Dubinsky for a second. I heard this from Paul Mara last year. Dubinsky's like a little kid. He's very immature. We forget he grew up out in Alaska. It's not like he's used to being in Manhattan. The first time Dubinsky went to a baseball card store to do an autograph signing, he wanted to buy the store. He got so excited, never saw all of that stuff in like a place, and got real excited. And, you know, the team teases him. They used to call him the 8-year-old. They used to laugh and say, whose turn is it to room with the 8-year-old on the road? So you're talking about a kid that's a little immature for New York City. Now you got a bully who's pushing buttons on this kid. He might force these guys to revolt, and if they revolt, it's going to get ugly quick.
Well, it's a lot easier to move the coach out and the coach's contract than it is to move 20-24 guys. And you know what, Jim? You made a fantastic point. You made such a good point. I need you to listen back to yourself. Perfect point with Dubinsky. Look what he did with Leeson. For what reason? I don't think I've ever seen anything in my life, and Mandor covered it real quick. You don't put the kid on the bench to watch the game. That is the most ridiculous thing you can do. First of all, you're wasting bench space. You might as well bring up a Dane Byers or a Grachov. Why can't we see Grachov? Listen. If you think the team sucks and you don't even want to be the coach anymore and you want to act like a jackass, because that's what I think this guy is, he's just a jackass. To bench the kid, make him press, and not even play him is ridiculous. It's a waste of space. Bring up Gratcherf. Maybe the kid puts the puck in the net. Maybe he inserts some energy into the lineup. Maybe something happens. It's better than having this poor kid who has no clue what Tortorella wants from him, because one day he makes a play with six broken toes, and he's been playing for 2 weeks that way. The guy gets healthy, and now you're going to sit him on the bench. It's ridiculous. And like everybody said, you knew what you were getting in Leeson, and you left him on the roster. The guy's an idiot. I'm sorry. I think John Tortorella is a jackass. I'm an Italian guy, and
Take it easy, Rick.
One of those guys. He's one of those guys that wants to make a statement no matter what the cost. And the cost is Rangers losing games.
I mean, I can't disagree with you. It looks like he's just so stubborn that he won't change his ways and bring in let me ask you guys this. I'm asking, it's a rhetorical question. But when your team is struggling, a normal team, when they're lacking goal production from certain guys, say they expected Boyle to score more goals. Let's not take him. Let's take Leeson, because that's a perfect example. They were looking for Leeson to be – he should have more than 3 goals, you would think, from what they were expecting. When he doesn't produce, normal teams send a guy down and bring another guy up who is, possibly prospering – in the minor leagues, and see if he can re-energize the team. Am I thinking crazy, Bill, and thinking that's how it works? But he doesn't do that. and he keeps mixing those lines up. The only time they had success all year is when they kept the lines together, and he was itching to move those lines and come up with these crazy line combinations. How did he stick with the same lines for a period? I'm frustrated. He's really, he's made some jackass moves, like Paulie D said. I couldn't get that Leeson and that Boyle move over the weekend.
And, that's the other thing with Leeson. I mean, he's played on every line. He's played on the fourth line, the third line, the second line, the first line. They're moving this kid all around. And, how's he supposed to get his game? I don't see how he's supposed to. I don't see how any of them are supposed to get the game going. They got to look over at center. Who am I playing with tonight? Who am I playing with this period, this shift? It changes from shift to shift. I put it on the website yesterday. I said, here's the line combinations for tonight's game, subject to change after the first shift. And everybody said, it's absolutely correct. Last year, everybody made a joke. Some guy on the internet created the Tom Rennie line generator, and you click a button, and it just shuffles all the lines. Now it's the same thing this year. It's the same thing. From night to night, the lines change. Chris Higgins is a center. No, he's a left wing. No, he's on the second line. He's on the third line. He's on the fourth line.
Donald Brashear is on the second line. On Sega 94, you said that random lines or something like that. The lines? That's what it is. And this kid Leeson, listen, I'm not championing Enver Leeson like he's the second coming of, he's going to be a great player. But he's good enough to play with Gabrick in the beginning of the season. Like, he's been moved up, he's rewarded. Then, the next night, he's on the fourth line. Just like you said, Jim, this goes for all the players. It's Avery's on the first line, now he's on the third line, now he's on the second line. And it makes no sense because nobody is scoring. It doesn't make any sense.
You know what, guys? Gretzky gave up on Leeson. He frustrated Gretzky that much, and we still went out and traded a very good two-way player for this guy.
Oh, no, I can't. That Korpakovsky was the worst.
You traded the same player for each other.
Yeah, they're both. He's a defensive guy who will never amount to anything, and Leeson's an offensive guy who's never going to amount to anything. But then, listen, if you went down with Corpito, that's fine.
You don't think Corp was a more rounded player than Leeson was?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. He played, oh, my God, yes.
Absolutely. How do you see such leaps and bounds? The bottom line is that both guys have produced the exact same thing. They're both fast skaters. They both might be able to carry the puck a little bit. Both had hands of stone.
Okay,
I don't see that as that much of a big difference.
Let me ask you a question, though. If you have the same exact player, okay, just like you said, let's say they both score 10 goals the end of the year. What was their plus-minus? Isn't that much bigger of a factor here? You can't tell me that Korpakovsky was a defensive liability the way Leeson is, because I don't agree with that. I think the guy was, first of all, he was bigger, stronger on the puck, and smarter. He made better decisions. I'm not a Leeson's fan. Let me tell you, the kid has talent, and somebody made a comment, and I had a chuckle. He's like a Zhurdov with no talent. He can do good things at times, but the negatives so outweigh the positives on the guy. I can't believe he cracked a roster over someone like Grachev. And the excuses I keep hearing about Grachev is he's not ready and he needs more minutes than we're going to give him. Listen, at this point, we've lost, we're in a slump from hell. Bring the kid up, play him three games. Let's see what happens. Maybe insert some excitement. Maybe something good happens. It's better than watching Leeson play with his skates. Yeah, put them on the first line. You never know.
What's the worst that can happen? They're going to lose?
Exactly.
I've always had that opinion of sports teams, all my teams, not just the Rangers. If you're losing, what's the big deal about making a change? What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to lose? Well, you're already doing that,
I mean, David, Tortorella's already destroyed Leeson's confidence. I think Leeson's probably...
Yeah, I mean...
He's worthless to us probably for the rest of the year, I think. And like you said, you know what? You got to change something up. You got to make some sort of difference here. I totally agree. I thought Groucho should have made the team out of camp, but that's not, you know, we can go back and forth on Leeson and Korpikowski, but that's not making this team any different, and it's not.
Yeah.
We might as well be just, you know, sticking our head in the sand on that one. The bottom line is that this team is being lost by the coach by whatever methods that he's employing. There. You know, a guy that's really, for some reason, I think flourishing, though, is I think Anisimov has played really well.
Yeah, he has.
I've liked his game over the last, you know, 10 or so games.
My concern is that with some of these younger players, especially like Delzato and Gilroy, is that they're not used to losing and being, you know, these guys are winners. And these kids, they get used to it. And we're, you know, you said we're in a little bit of slump, Paulie. We're in a free fall. I think we're in a free fall.
No, you know what? It's not a slump anymore. This is a trend. You know, there's a difference. It's not a slump anymore. This is a trend. I lost my train of thought now.
Please, do not curse on the air, please.
Sorry, well, we're not on the air. Show is on, but not streaming. Anisimov, I agree. I think he's played very well. Why isn't he getting more ice time? I mean, you don't have a natural center on the first line. Why not try him? Again, what's the worst that could happen? You lose. I mean, we've done that.
But this team's not built on merit anyway, because if it was built on merit, there'd be a whole new cast of guys up here that are playing great in Hartford right now. Varos, the mouth's favorite player, wouldn't be here.
Not my favorite.
Chris Kostopoulos.
Chris Kostopoulos loves Varos. Talk to Toxie about that.
Yeah, I know. I read it. But don't you think that was maybe a little shot in the ribs, too, to just say, hey, when the worst guy in your roster has to be the one that's trying to spark the team every night and take a beat. And, you know, every time you read an article, the guy had a fight and he didn't get knocked out. So people said he did much better in his fight. Well, much better meant he didn't go off the ice bleeding or get knocked out like Cam Jansen did to him last year.
It reminds me of when Nick Kyprios used to try to fight. That's who it reminds me of.
But you know what? Kyprios had a better shot of winning than Varos ever did.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're right, though.
Jordan Owens, Weiss, and Byers are tearing up Hartford right now. They're tearing it up. Chad Johnson's playing fantastic down there. I'm watching them every night on the computer. I'm watching the games. There's no way in heck that Byers and Weiss should not be on this team after the All-Star break if we keep playing like this.
Hey, let me ask you guys this. What are you guys thinking about P.A. Parenteau? What do you guys think about him?
He's a diamond dozen.
Good shootout.
He's a tweener.
He's a tweener.
I think, my opinion, from what I see, in baseball, he's what they call a 4A guy. A little too good for the minors, not good enough for the majors.
Yeah. He's the Danny Heap of hockey.
Ken Jernander.
Daniel Gano.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Daniel Gano.
He's just Stephen King. He's a guy. Stephen King. Paulie, I think he's a guy that, you know, if you need a forward, you know, in an emergency, you can call him up for a couple of games, and you know, he's never gonna set the world on fire. That's my opinion.
Now, you know what's funny about him, though. Now, the funny thing about him is that in the scouting reports and everything, they're saying that this kid has got some very unique natural talents, and I mean. I'm not positive, and Rick, you could probably back this up. Wasn't he tearing it up in Hartford? Wasn't he the leading goal scorer on the team?
Yes. But he was playing but you know what? Last year also, if you remember, it was him, AA, and Avery as a line when Avery went down there. And he seems to be the guy in Hartford, like whoever just said, I'm sorry, I missed it, but whoever called him a 4A player nailed it right on the head. He's a fringe NHL guy.
That was me.
He doesn't do anything in the NHL extraordinary. He's not going to score 25 goals. He's not going to put up 200 minutes in penalties. And he's not going to be the best penalty killer out there. But he's a perfect guy in case of an injury. And he's going to be up and down on the buses. And then you know what? He's going to play 15 games a year for the Rangers. Anything more is a joke.
He's a black ace.
Don't get rich.
He's a Reg Dunlop.
Hey, Rich.
All right, guys. I got to go. I got a wife. Not a life, but a wife. I got to go. And, tomorrow. Joe Patterson.
Joe.
I'll stay on if you guys stay on for a little while longer. I'm up for it. Up to you guys.
I wanted to ask one more question. Ricky, you're saying I really wish I could watch the Hartford team, but I can't.
You got a computer? I'll give you a place you can go for free.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't do that on the air, but if you could send it to me, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
But what I was going to ask you was, how does Gratchev look down there? How's he playing? What's going on with him?
I'll be honest with you, I started watching just for that reason, to watch him and Byers.
Right.
Byers is my favorite player down there, but he doesn't stand out right now.
Wow.
He's he doesn't look bad at all in his own zone. He doesn't look bad without the puck. He doesn't float, let's put it that way. But he isn't he's not dominant. It's not like he's, you know, he's in on every play or he's getting chances on every shift. He's getting his points. He's very defensively. He's looking a lot better in his own zone than I thought he was going to be. But he's not that breakout, standout player right now. I really think he might be going through maybe a mid-year slump. You know, maybe the grind of 3 games and 3 nights and, you know, the bigger, tougher league is catching up with him a little bit. And, you know, he's got to recharge his battery. But he's not standing out.
Have you
Could
seen,
that be,
like, at all flashes of brilliance from him, you know, some sweet moves or anything like that?
I'll tell
all?
You what, he's got, when he's open, he can get a shot off like you wouldn't believe. The guy's wrist shot's amazing.
That's his game, right? I mean, he's more of a big guy in front, work the corners kind of guy, isn't he?
He's more of a I'm trying to think of who to compare him to. You know, I'd like to say right now in the league, I'm trying to think. He's more of a, like a I'm gonna score from 10 feet and in closer type guy. He gets
power
like
forward type.
Yeah, he's more. Yeah, I would say that. He, you know what? He might be a little bit like a young John LeClair. He gets his nose dirty.
Right.
He scores from 10 feet and in.
Well, that's good.
And
he can create some room for
need.
Some guys up here that nobody ever goes to the net anyway.
Exactly. I think we need that. You know, I just think we need that. I think we need, you know, we talked about North American style of hockey. That's what it is, man. North stout, you know, win the puck. That's the other thing. We do not win loose puck battles. Unless there's 18 guys in one corner against two of theirs, we don't win the loose puck battles. I mean, I thought the part that I saw last night with the Brashear, Drury, and Callahan, I actually thought was okay, because the one thing they were doing was winning the puck battles down low. I don't see anybody else winning loose puck battles. I don't know if I'm watching the same game as you guys, but in the offensive zone, we just are terrible in the corners.
Second guy comes in late every time. You watch, they'll lose the puck battle, and then the next forechecker is coming in as the puck's going out of the zone. Happens so often.
They always look like they're not in the proper position. It's horrible. I don't know. But
you know what bothered me last night about Brashear, and it's actually 2 games in a row against Pittsburgh. Did you notice Goddard twice skate up to Brashear and poke him and wiggle his gloves to drop his gloves, and Brashear skated away? To me, you know, I am the fight guy. I love it. But there's a time, too, when your heavyweight skates away twice and is challenged by the other team's heavyweight, the guys on the bench got to go, what's this guy doing? Why is he not fighting him? Is he going to be there if we need him to fight? You know, like, I don't know. Brashear's done this the last 3 or 4 years. If you go and look at his fights, he'll have 5 fights in the first 10 games and then go 25 games without a fight.
I think, Rick, I got to be honest with you, though. I think, you know, when he's playing on the fourth line with the guys, you know, I would have to say that, you know, I think that he'll fight. He don't care that way. I think last night was kind of an honor for him, and I think that, you know, Torts was trying to do something with him, try to figure out if we can get some kind of line that generates some physicality and some snarl, and possibly, I'll tell you what, if he can stay in that position with them, that line might not be too bad if Chris Drury and Callahan could find the back of the net. I think last night, I did notice that, and I think one of the reasons for that is I think he wanted to play hockey last night with these guys. Yes, you know, to go toe-to-toe with another guy, but I don't think he's got anything to prove against Goddard. And that's just how I see it in that game. I think when he plays on the fourth line with Voros, and if they want to go, as long as he's not taking a bad penalty or so, he's got no problem dropping the gloves and knocking somebody's teeth in. I think Torch put him in a position, and I thought he was smart enough to try and take advantage of it and try and stay out of the penalty box. Besides that, I thought there was a terrible call on him last night. When everybody gathered,
oh, the roughing call?
He gets called for the rough and throwing his
glove.
I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a bad call.
And then 2 minutes later, down the other end of the ice, Garen punches Gabrick in the mouth and doesn't get called.
Yeah, well, that's when, you know, that's a horse of a whole nother color. How you know, we don't take care of that. That's ridiculous. It's the same thing as running the goalie. I mean, here we got the number one goal scorer in the game right now, the only gem on this team, the only guy that is really, you know, the New York Gabricks. And, I mean, if you so much as snarl at him, the whole team should jump on somebody. And we just don't,
but,
we don't
who's
care.
Jump on him? That's my whole point. When I say we're too North American, we don't have enough North Americans on the team, he's playing with Prosper, who I like Prosper. He jumps in, you know, the guy's crazy. He's diving in after goals and headbutting himself. But, you know, on that line, who's going to protect Gabrick?
Oh, nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah, no. It's not
the
that
line
that's going to protect Gabrick.
Callahan and Dubinsky are two guys that, you know, I think I get a kick out of Dubinsky. He'll drop his gloves with anybody, but he's a terrible fighter. But you know what? The kid's got balls, and so does Callahan. But
right. Yeah,
really,
I don't think you have to be a great fighter. Just show that you're going to stick up your teammate, you know?
Answer the bell. Exactly.
Answer the bell. That's
that type of guy on this team? We just don't have it.
The other night, I honestly don't remember if it was the Tampa game or if it was the first Pittsburgh game when Boyle had to fight. I gave him a ton of credit for fighting, for jumping in there, because he's admittedly not a fighter. For a big guy, he's not a fighter. But I thought for him to jump in there and drop the gloves, I gave him a ton of credit. You know, at least he did something.
And he fought two very tough guys. Walker and Carnacopa are both very tough guys.
And then he got pinched the next game. That I didn't understand.
I had thought that maybe he was a little sore after the fight. I don't know, but I mean nothing got made of it. But I don't know. I kind of like Boyle. I thought he's been a bit of a surprise for me. I thought he's played okay. You know, he's been better than I thought.
They're gonna bring in Matt Macaroni.
Macaroni.
The stash. Where do they do with him? Is he in Charlotte now?
Finland. He signed in Finland.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
But you know, I said it earlier. There's a couple guys out there. If you want to go out and get some size, and you know, John Erskine in Washington is the prime example, or Matt Harkner in Ottawa. Here's two guys that were just designated goons for the first 4 or 5 years in the league. Nobody wanted to take a chance of playing them. Now all of a sudden, Erskine is a defenseman that you couldn't trade for if you wanted him. Washington will never give the guy up.
Right.
Clears the front of the net, drops his gloves, fights, hits. This kid, John Scott, if you go and YouTube some of his fights, he's hurting people this year. He's a 6'7", 255-pound defenseman playing right wing for Minnesota, and he's actually beat Bugard out of his spot. Bugard hasn't been playing that much because of this kid. You know, this is a guy we can get. Play him as a seventh defenseman. If we need a defenseman, play him as a left wing. He can always move back and forth, up and down during a game. Get rid of Varo. Send Varos back to Minnesota. I bet you they would take him.
oh, my God. You know what, guys? I'm exhausted. I got to tell you, I'm exhausted. I mean, between doing the shows and watching tape and watching these guys, I'm mentally exhausted with this team because they don't pay us enough for this type of stuff, man. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what, I
honestly feel in my heart, and I'm not lying, I really feel in my heart that there's so many other people for both jobs that are so much better. Because if we can sit here and analyze this team and see what exactly the needs that we've been crying about for years, and you can tell me how fast this game has got, I don't care what anybody says. You look at the New Jersey Devils, they have not changed at all. They have not changed before they won cups, after they won cups, pre-lockout, whatever you want to say, the New Jersey Devils have tweaked the game that they've played for the longest period of time and are there every single year and have a chance. And I don't care. You know, I just, it amazes me how people don't see it. We're in the East. We're not in the West. The East Coast teams, you got to be able to play some smash-mouth, transitional, tight defensive hockey, or you will lose. It's the bottom line. Unless you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, who have, you know, taken a few on the chin, guys, because they sucked for the longest time. They got two of the best players a pick could have ever gotten them in Malkin and Crosby, and they built. I mean, the only way to get the team like the Penguins did was to build year after year after year and pay some bucks and take a few on the chin because they suffered a long time. But that's it. If you look at the consistent cornerstone in the East, it's been the Devils. Why? Because they play the same style. They've tweaked it, but they still play the same style. And the bottom line is, and we've all said this, they don't have big-name players. What they have are excellent role players who've been brought up through the systems, and it's the bottom line. And if the Rangers don't do something and can't see this, I don't think they ever will.
Well, don't you think it's a telltale sign when a team like the Devils go through four or five coaches and Tortorella never got a shot anywhere outside of Tampa? How many coaches the year he was, you know, the years, the, what was it, a year and a half he was gone, how many coaches were changed and you never heard his name mentioned? You know, and again, it's say they're living in 10 years ago. All of a sudden, John Tortorella, we got to get Torts. It's almost like the Costanza character in Seinfeld with Larry David playing Steinbrenner, being off the wall. Can't you just picture Sather sitting in there with a cigar screaming, you got to get me Francis. Bring in Emil to coach. He's dead. Oh, bring him in anyway. Yeah. It's like he's just
hey, don't
in a time warp.
Don't jinx him, Ricky. Don't jinx him, Ricky. He's coming on the show next Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize, Emil. But it's just, you know, it's like Sather's just, he's a horrible person for New York, too. I don't know, if, you know, like, you guys ever see the fan that tracked him down that time in the Hall of Fame, and he just tells the kid to basically drop dead?
Told him to piss off.
Oh, yeah, piss off. And I've seen him at the Garden. I've seen people walk up to him and, you know, ask him. I told you my birthday this year. I went with my wife. There was 15 people in the building for the rookie game. And there he was, and I walked up and I asked him. I said, oh, Glenn, it's a pleasure to meet you. I was like, can I take a picture with you? And his answer was, if you must. You know, he's just a miserable, you know, all the time. He's never just a person. Neil Smith used to come down in pregame warm-ups and watch the Rangers skate around right above Marv Albert in the radio booth over there and watch the team and hang out with the fans and talk. And he was such a good fit for New York. And Sather just is not a good fit.
And he got a coach of life now, it sounds like.
Yeah. That's why Sather spends most of the year in, was it Palm Springs?
Well, I think we're really going to be lucky now because I think it's going to be Messier's coming in as the GM. I think Leach wants to be a coach. I think Glenn Anderson's going to be part of their front office with them, and I hope it's going to be in the next 2 years. Having Leach back is a big sign that Messier's taking over that front office.
Yeah, I have to agree that
think so?
Having Leach back is definitely – and I got, you know what? I wouldn't doubt it. I would not doubt the fact that – I mean, we all know how – great friends Messier was with, you know, the core four of, you know, Leach and Graves and Richter. I tell you, one guy I think would be fantastic for this team, and I don't know that he'd ever, you know, come out, but I think Jeff Bukaboom would be a fantastic guy to come back to this franchise as well.
He's coaching now, isn't he?
What's that?
He's coaching in juniors now, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he'd be a great if we can get him somewhere close to the players and get into some kind of development. I think he'd be a great assistant coach for the New York Rangers and get that toughness back. I mean, God, I would kill to see a Jeff Bukaboom again on the ice in front of someone like Henrik Lundqvist. I know you guys would too, but he was a tenacious man who just, you know, I think we need that again. I think we need that old North American style hockey to ride the Lightning here.
Yeah. Luke is the assistant coach of the Sudbury Wolves of the OHL.
Okay, there you go.
See, I'd rather see Messier be a coach. I'd rather have Richter in the front office. He seems like more of a front office kind of a guy.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Messier as a coach and Leach be an assistant coach. I think that would be a passionate group there.
Do you think
Messier
would be too much of a almost like a Tortorella? I could see Messier choking a guy. You know, can't you see like Messier choking Leeson like he did Blake that time? Like, you know, get the puck.
I don't see.
Do you?
I don't see Messier as head coach material. I really don't.
Yeah. Well, not. No,
tries
not
too much.
Not without going through the ranks, gentlemen. I'm
tries
sorry.
Tries too much.
I think you know one of the things. Something a head coach, especially if you look at Gretzky, you know you got to go through the ranks because they're great players. Doesn't mean they're going to be great coaches.
Well, that's
and I think
true.
If Messier ever wants to coach, I think he needs to get, you know, go OHL or something like that. And
right.
You know,
Mark
Messier
is not
going to
co-coach the Charlotte Checkers to learn how to do it.
Well, you know what it is, too, is that you would like to think that the guy played with the intensity and he could instill that as a coach. But really, how many star players ever do make good coaches? You don't see that happening at all, really.
No. You see the Muckers make really good coaches. You know, like, you know, a lot of people underestimate what a good coach Nick Fatio was down in the AHL level. And if you listen to a lot of guys that came up in the San Jose and some of the organizations he was involved in, they give him a lot of credit because he taught guys what it took to get to the NHL, that little extra step, because he was there himself. And, you know, like a guy who failed miserably as a coach was Ron Duque. You know, people talk all the time about how his team would make fun of him. You know, he'd come in and there'd be Sassoon posters hanging up in the locker room and stuff like that. Like his team didn't respect him.
Speaking of Duque, this is funny, and I meant to mention this on the air because I know Eddie would have gotten a kick out of it. Sitting here watching the game the other night, and, you know, they had Duque on in between periods, and my niece was sitting here watching the game with me, and she says, she looks at the picture of him, she says, "Who the hell is that?" And I said, "That's Ron Duque." I said, "He used to play for the Rangers years ago." I said, "Now he's one of the commentators on the in the studio or whatever." She goes, "What's up with his hair?" And I said, "Well, he's always kind of had, he's been flamboyant, he's always had a full head of hair." And I said, you know, even in the 70s, I showed her pictures of him and she, from the 70s, and she goes, "Well, the 70s are over." I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, well,
I got a phone call last year from somebody at what are they on, XM Radio? Him and Danico had that radio show, The Man Show. They do a show where it's like there's not just sports. And the guy calls me up, and, you know, I'll be honest with you, when I do a signing, I never pay anybody more than $2,500. You know, that's, like, the limit. And they called me up, and they said, "Well, we're looking, you know, you've done some very successful signings, and we have this new radio program, and Danico will come in for about $3,000, and Duque's looking for about $10,000. Would you be interested in when we want to book him?" And I said to myself, I said, "Duque's asking for $10,000, and then you got a guy like Danico who's a three-time cup winner and blah, blah, blah." It's just so fitting that Ron Duque, you know, would just still all of a sudden find his way back to TV with his big, you know, people make fun of Don Cherry, but some of those outfits, man.
Yeah, you know
the
what?
Polyester shirts opened up all the way.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Duque, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't remember Duque being, you know, just an outrageous player, an outrageous hockey player. I'm sorry. I, you know, there's some guys that just don't have the right, and $10,000 for a signing. Who, you know what? Unless you're an old-time Ranger fan, an old-time hockey fan, I mean, I could see maybe Ken Danico asking for $10,000 more so than Ron Duque.
How about Lundqvist getting 22 tonight?
$22,000?
$22,000 for an hour and a half tonight at the Bramis Park Mall in Jersey.
That's just absurd.
You know, and that's what
makes a guy that makes $7 million a year who needs $22,000 to go to Paramus and sign autographs for fans, the people that pay his salary, I think that's just absurd.
So do I.
$100 a piece they were charging the fans tonight.
In this economy, too, at this time of the year?
Yeah. Yeah, even more so.
Unbelievable. Unreal. Well, I think we've covered everything, guys. What do you think?
And we get to hang out with Joe Patterson tomorrow night.
Archie. Everybody's got to bring up Archie. Just keep bringing up Archie the Ape.
Anyway, all right,
guys. All right, guys. Good night.
Good night, fellas.
All right. We'll catch you guys tomorrow night.
Take care.
Thanks for staying on. It's a good podcast.
Yep.
Good night, guys.